atop the skyline of downtown Chicago to 38 states and Canada. Your host for this evening, Justin Kaufman.
A new bill in Springfield wants to make it illegal to pump your own gas. Other states do it. Should Illinois follow suit? New Hampshire holds the first primary for the Democrats who want to run for president. Lots of different personalities. But do you vote for the personality or the issues? What issue above all others will take you to the polls this year? The first lawsuit has been filed in the Houston Astros cheating scandal. Will the Astros, or MLB, have to pay out for every single player that was victimized by stealing signs? And would you pay $30 for a burger? Restaurants are charging more and more for the American staple. What's your breaking point when it comes to hamburger and fries? Good evening and welcome. I'm Justin Kaufman. 312-981-7200. But first, our big story tonight, coronavirus deaths hit a milestone. As of 5:30 p.m., deaths from the new virus topped 1,000. Cases are now close to 43,000 worldwide. Americans are quarantined on a cruise ship off the coast of Japan, and a flight was grounded at Midway Airport today when passengers fell ill. The virus is having an effect on the economy as oil and energy prices are falling, and iPhone production has stalled. As Foxconn, the company that manufactures some of the smartphone parts, is only partially operating at this point. All this as we close in on the one-month anniversary of the virus, first being detected in Wuhan, China. So let's take our temperature tonight, metaphorically. Let's do it all together. Are you concerned about the numbers of infected coming out of China? Are you worried about the virus spreading? Are you prepared for a new world order where coronavirus is just like influenza and you're lining up to get a shot at the CVS? 312-981-7200. The most read story in the Chicago Tribune today was an interesting piece that had a headline that was, "What are the symptoms of coronavirus and what precautions should people in the Chicago area be taking?" That was the number one looked at story. We all get the email right before 7 o'clock. Everybody's reading this story today. In it, nothing. Nothing of note, to be honest with you. I read it thinking, oh, they find out more and more about coronavirus. But essentially, at the end of the day, the story that's been told is, if you'd like to know how to take precautions, wash your hands and don't go to work if you start showing symptoms. Okay, what are those symptoms? Well, it's a lot like the flu. It's a runny nose, sore throat, and cough. It can develop into a fever and a lung infection that causes shortness of breath. People should see a doctor if they experience a worsening cough. Doctor in the piece says, the illness can start like a regular cold and you feel crummy. What? That's 6 months out of the year for all of us. I can only imagine the kind of anxiety everybody's having right now. I say a sniffle. I wake up with a sniffle. I'm like, uh-oh. When it says, and then it goes on, the article goes on to say, how likely are you to get it? They always say this thing. They say, relatively low. What does that mean? Again, I don't know what relatively low means in the infectious disease community. Like relatively low, as in like under 50%. We're talking relatively low, under 1%. And like I said, the final thing that's here, this is what really kind of ticked me off about this piece. It says, what precautions can you take? And I'm glad the Tribune did this. This is why it's the number one story on the site today. Experts remind people to make sure they are frequently washing their hands and not go to work if they're showing symptoms. Not just to ward off the new coronavirus, but also the more common flu and other viruses. So we're going with a generic don't go to work if you're sick motif. The experts are deciding there's nothing you can really do about coronavirus, so let's keep pushing the other stuff. Let's keep pushing the flu prevention. Let's keep pushing virus prevention. Health authorities say masks do little to protect people against the spread of viruses and are asking people not to hoard them. Good luck with that. Doctors also urge Chicagoans to make sure they get a flu shot to ward off the flu, although they also say it would not protect people from the new strain of coronavirus. Okay. There are no approved treatments for the new coronavirus. It's either cleared by the patient's immune system and they recover or they die. So thanks for all that new information. That's the idea they're saying. They're still urging Chicagoans to get a flu shot, even though it has nothing to do with the coronavirus. This article is all about the coronavirus. But the doctors are taking, they realize they only get, what, one or two reporters that come around them per year. They want to make sure they're still on the flu. We still got to get that flu shot. We got to let people know about this flu shot. Yes, the coronavirus is bad, but get a flu shot. Oh, okay. 312-981-7200. 630 says the markets are looking good. The stock market's at an all-time high today. So people are looking past the coronavirus. Yes, that's true. I read a story about this today, that the market is a good indicator of where stocks are at. But there's a concern from economists that the stalled production that is coming out of China, these huge warehouses that are empty, as I mentioned, Foxconn only partially up and running, is going to have a really profound effect on quarter one production. And so we're not going to know about quarter one production for another month or two. So when we get to, what is it, the end of March, April, right in that area somewhere, and every company that usually is traded high on the stock market says, yeah, our projections are about a billion off. That's when the stock market will be affected. 913 says the coronavirus is transmitted through intimate contact only. I don't know about that. I would like to have known that in the article, but we'll go back up to how do you get it? How likely, just says that it's, it doesn't really get into how they get it, but maybe you're right. 312-981-7200. I don't know. I feel like we're, like anytime there's any sort of new virus, everyone seems to know exactly what the effect, like this person says, sharing of cigarettes, needles, drinking vessels, like, all right, we're getting into this area that I don't have, kissing, it's 913 says kiss. Yeah, I'm not sure. From what I have heard and what I have read is that they're still trying to figure that part out. And I think it has much more to do with what you just said, 913. So we're going to throw your texts out the window and we're going to pretend that we didn't read those, because I think it's more of a respiratory cold, like they're putting it in. Coronavirus is in the category of colds. So it's in the same vibe and the same concept of getting a cold. You can get a cold from not sharing cigarettes. I don't smoke needles. I don't take needles or do needles. I don't share drinking vessels. I'm kissing all the time. You got me there. No, I'm kidding. I think this is really just, as they kind of figure it out, it's still continuing to be transmitted like a cold. 312-981-7200. Are you worried, though? And should I be worried that I'm getting on a plane in a week and a half? That's really the concern. And for the first time, I think, in all of this, today's Midway Airport story where a flight was grounded because two people who had recently been to China were feeling ill. They ended up saying it was nothing. Everything's okay. It was cleared. No coronavirus. I think it was stomach aches. But still, you know, that's the part that still he's trying to figure out how the pathways of a virus and how it spreads, especially when you're talking about, infecting over 40,000 people and probably way, way more. 312-981-7200. 815 says flu shots are important. Yeah, and I didn't say that flu shots are not important. I guarantee that's an important thing. I get a flu shot. I'm sure you get a flu shot. I'm just saying, when you write an article about how can you prevent yourself from getting coronavirus and the doctor says, get a flu shot, it won't help you, but since I got you, get a flu shot. It just seems like a game of misdirection. And 312 says, sounds to me there are less fatalities from coronavirus than there are from the average flu. And that is true. Now, when this is all said and done, we'll see where we're at on that. And I think that, obviously, we did the stats last year. It's still, the influenza worldwide is still just a serious concern. Hundreds of thousands of people. So good conversation, 312-981-7200. We'll take our first break here. Coming up, let's get into this gas pumping bill. I know Roe was talking about it a little bit earlier, but this bill that came out of Springfield today that wants to make Illinois a state like New Jersey or Oregon, they want to make it illegal for you to pump your own gas. They want to have attendance. They want to take us back to the 60s, literally. What do you think of that? Is that a good idea? Is that safety? Is that comfort? Would you pay a little bit extra for that to be someone else's job? Or is this ludicrous? This is one area of our society we do not need to fix. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. 630 says, hey, I'm getting on a plane for Jamaica Saturday, so if I die, I'll die tanned. That's a good outlook on life. That's good. All right, so let's make a transition since we're talking about coronavirus. And I know that people want to talk about this topic. I can never tell with bills that come out of Springfield. Let me start right there. They're not unlike the bills that might come out of the House. You get this idea that anything can be brought up. And obviously, the more salacious or strange, the better, meaning more people are going to pay attention to it. I'm not sure how far along a state representative from Oak Park's pumping bill is. But she has suggested that Illinois follow suit with states like New Jersey, Oregon. A great story about that. And make it illegal for us to pump our own gas, to go back to a full service state. Is that something that's actually going to happen? Probably not. But it's good talk show fodder, I'll tell you that. 312-981-7200. I was in Portland, Oregon over the summertime for our vacation. We went up to Seattle and Portland. And I did not... I was in Portland. We needed gas to head out of town. And I did not realize that it was a full service state. And when I popped out of the car to fill up the rental, I grabbed the nozzle, looked for the credit card. I was, okay, here we go. And a gentleman walked up to me, and as you do in any gas station, especially living in the city of Chicago like I do, you know, anyone that gets in the space, close to your space where you're pumping gas, you automatically think it's somebody who is trying to ask for money or do something else. You automatically, the hair on the back of your neck is like, what do you want, dude? That's what I thought. I thought this guy was trying to ask for money. And he's like, you're not from here, are you? You're not from around here. I got that speech. I'm like, what do you mean? And he told me that Oregon was a full-service state. I was like, oh. So I asked him a couple questions about it. He said, it's safety, but it's left over. I said, do you make enough money? He said, no. But it's something everyone's used to, and it's just the way it is. So could that be Illinois? The text line has lit up. So has the phone line. Ruth, what do you think? Should we be a full-service gas station state?
You know, after all these years of pumping their own gas, what is the safety question? I don't get any of this. Yeah, not right. One thing.
I don't either.
That's happening here, you know? So, I mean, you know, I wish that you had some answers for me, but you don't. but yeah. it like blows my mind.
Well, I'm not even sure that they know. To be honest with you, looking into the research of it, because the bill has been put in and there's not a lot of media on it yet. There will be, I'm sure. And we put a request in for the state rep to come on tonight. But I have to say, safety is always a concern. When you look at New Jersey and you look at the statutes in both Oregon and New Jersey, they point to fire safety. Because I was going to say, is it economic?
Happened?
I don't know.
But what has happened, like, safety-wise? I've never heard of a gas station blowing up because, you know, a person was pumping gas.
No, I agree.
You know?
No, but that's... Thanks, Ruth. We were saying the same thing before the show. If this was knee-jerk... If there was a big, you know, did you hear about the gas station explosion that rocked six blocks in Downers Grove? Of course, I'm making this up. I'm saying if that was a thing and they're like, oh, we need to get some laws on the books, I could understand. But just to say there's a safety issue when there hasn't been any safety issues, I don't understand the bill as well. Let's get to the text. They're coming in fast and furious. There's a ton of these. Oh, let's see. 847 says, I live in Fontana, Wisconsin. On the way home from work tonight, gas was $2.17 a gallon. Gas just south of the border is approximately 35 cents a gallon more. Self-serve. What do you think it's going to be when they have to hire someone to pump the gas? We already see fast food workers wanting $15 an hour. Could you imagine the liability? Okay, I can understand that. 815 says, no attendance. You're just going to wait in lines. Who wants that job in the heat or the cold? Only 16 years old. Who's going to scratch? They're going to scratch cars. They're going to drip gas. There's got to be some corruption under that bill. Went right to corruption. Illinois, like every place the Democrats are in charge of, is a laughingstock in this country. Nothing they come up with surprises me. Yeah, but again, there are other states that do this. So I'm with you. I don't want to see it, but I don't know if it's Illinois is a laughingstock. 224 says, let's pay more for gasoline. How about we focus on education taxes and public pension plan disaster? Yeah, I'm not sure how that's all going to play out. Like, I don't know what the... There might be some revenue opportunities there. 815 says, why stop there? They should make Walmart full service so I don't have to scan my own groceries to check out. They're going to be started on that, right? There's a lot of costs involved in that, says 630. 708 says, can they check your oil and wash your windows as well? Maybe. Right? Do you remember that 708 says, do you also remember back in the day why we went to pump your own gas? What brought that on? 312 says, you're telling me that they want a person to pump your gas, but they're okay with no one driving our cars? That's a good point. 217, what are you in for? Murder one. What are you in for? Armed robbery. What are you in for? Pumping my own gas. There's no way that I'd let some 17-year-old pimply teenager put gas in my motorcycle and let it run over onto the tank, says 310. 773 says, Representative Lilly is my rep. She has a challenger as of this weekend for the first time in 10 years. This is a make work created by the state to increase revenues through wages and fees, charges to the franchise. It's a backdoor by the electrical vehicle lobby. Okay. 913 says, speak of the gas station. And speak of a gas station explosion, the gas station explosion will appear. Well, okay, I don't know about that. Promoter of the bill just doesn't want to pump her own gas and makes enough money and the rise in price won't bother her. Gas by me and Joliet was $2.65 tonight, says 815. I think it would be good for seniors, says 312. Maybe there's something to be said. I would say, and we're going to take a quick break here, and I want to come back because there's still a lot of text here, but I'll throw out something before we start to get the conversation going. Listening to everybody complain about it, it's almost forcing me the other way. It's forced me to say, you know what? Let's say they get the efficiency stuff figured out. I'm not waiting in line for gas. Understood. And maybe you're right, a 17-year-old pimply teenager. But let's say that they have great training, and let's say they figure out lines in some form, right? They got the people who designed the Portillo's drive-thru working at the gas station. Let's say that there's not a significant increase in gas prices. Let's say that it's all worked out by the way that the state deals with the tax. Why is it such a bad deal? It's a job for somebody, a low-wage job, working-class job that might help somebody and help people who are looking for work. And at the end of the day, I'm used to drive-thrus at fast food and other places where people are coming to the car and serve. What's the difference? And I wasn't alive for the full service. I mean, I was born in 1974, so late 70s, yeah. But my life as a driver has been a self-service life. So if you lived that life when it was full service, tell me why it's a bad idea. Because the more I listen to the complaining, it just feels like everything, oh, I don't want to change. Maybe it's a good idea. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. Coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, John Schmidt, the author of Hidden Chicago Landmarks, is back for his monthly visit to talk about hidden Chicago history. Tonight, we take on Black History Month. Talk a little Joe Louis, Mahalia Jackson, among other stories. That's coming up at 8 o'clock. Also tonight, it's a Chicago Accent Challenge. If you got a great Chicago accent, you could win a prize. We'll do that a little bit later in the program. 312-981-7200. Steve, what do you think? Do you think I'm crazy to go think that this might be a good idea to go back to full-service gas stations?
Well, I'm trying to figure out why we need to go back to full-service gas stations. And the other thing I'm kind of wondering about is, don't we have anything better to vote on in Springfield?
No, right? That's the one thing. When you see these bills come up, that's the first thing you think about. But let's pretend like this is the most important issue in the world.
Okay.
I never lived through full service. I mean, I didn't start driving until I was 16, so, you know, mid to late 80s. But maybe it's not a bad idea. Maybe if doesn't have an effect on the price, and it's going to make sure there's not fire hazards, why not?
Well, there is actually no fire hazards because of the fact that there are breakaways on the gas pumps.
Yeah, right.
There are safety measures to go through. Now, what are the taxes going to be? They brought this up on the show, but it's, you know, I don't even employ
them. We're losing them, darn it. Ah, bummer. All right, Sean, what do you think, Sean? What do you think? Do we should go back to full service?
No, absolutely not. I don't think, honestly, I don't think today's generation would be willing to pay anywhere between 7 to 9 cents more a gallon just for this service. Just like the previous caller, there was the gas pumps have the breakaways. There's not going to be a fire hazard.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I just wonder. I'm trying to figure out why. why this would be an issue we have to talk about in 2020, but maybe there's something to be said about doing it. I don't know.
I have no clue. If you go like further south, like in the southern states, every now and then you'll sit there and see like half self service and half full service.
Yeah, right.
It's more of a convenience thing. I grew up in downstate Illinois and just on the outskirts of Des Moines, and there was one gas station in town that did that did have the split, and for a couple of years, yeah, I worked there, and there was the group of customers, and that was your 40 plus, your 50 plus. They were they were always willing just for the service of having someone take care of their gas,
right.
And everyone else now they don't want to pay the extra.
All right, thanks, Sean. That good stuff, Mike. Mike, you're with me on this. You like the full service idea?
Well, back in the day. When that gas guy came up and said, what would you like, regular or unleaded?
Uh-huh.
He was a social media
but stop.
Guy.
Right.
Back in the day. He was like, all right, okay, Mrs. So-and-so, thanks for coming. What's Mr. So-and-so up to? All that.
Yeah.
He really didn't have the problems that you have these days.
Yeah, maybe.
With scams and all this.
I would just wonder.
Understand what I'm saying?
I do understand. Thanks, Mike. I wonder. These would be difficult jobs. You see how many what the gas station attendants of the day do? They lock themselves in that big the box that's in the center of a gas station. A lot of that is for security. If you got to walk out there in the cold or the hot, but also in the middle of the night, I wonder how that works. Jim, what do you think? You'd go full service?
Oh, hello, Jim?
Yeah, Jim.
Oh, hey, my comment was, how do we even pay for the gas if we got a guy doing it? We give him our credit card, debit card, and he enters the PIN?
I think you end up doing that part, and I think that he pumps the gas. I can't remember, because I told you, it happened to me accidentally. I was such an idiot, and I broke a law. I should have been in a Portland jail. I was already had the thing in the nozzle in the gas tank, and they're like, "What are you doing?" And I'm like, "Pumping gas." And I never really got to the point of figuring out what I was supposed to do with my credit cards. I think I just did it. So
yeah,
just be
all
like
right.
me. Just
all
be
right.
just be ignorant and be like me. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, very good. All right,
thanks, buddy. Joanne says, Joanne, what do you think? Would you go full service?
Well, I think full service is great if the gas station's going to pay the people, but I don't think the taxes should pay the people.
Right.
We got plenty of stuff that we need the taxes to pay for. Schools, retirement, all kinds of stuff. We don't need another tax.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, absolutely, Joanne.
I grew up with full service, and it's great sometimes, but again, the gas station people should pay for it. If that's what they want, and if they don't, that's fine, too.
Yeah, I agree with you. Thanks, Joanne. Thanks for the call. That's a great point, and I hope this gets sussed out. I think what's going to happen is the representative who put this in is going to go, oh, boy, I forgot about social media and talk radio and all that kind of stuff. And now there's going to be a lot of questions tomorrow. She's going to be like, I haven't done work in years. Now I got to answer all these questions. Because there are some questions. Because it's an intriguing idea. We can get all mad. We can get on our high horse and get mad at government. But it is intriguing. If it is cost effective, is it worth maybe returning to full service? What do you say, Jim? Jim, welcome to the show.
No, hey, I just sent you a short video that I sent Roll earlier. That there's a robotic automated gas pump that actually uses the same pump handles that's out there that they're using in Finland. And, I mean, that could cover all your disability people. That could cover also the cold weather. You don't have to get it on the car, and I'm sure there's an app for it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's true. I'm surprised they're not going that
route. Their thought processes are going backwards. There's plenty of jobs right now available that people can go forward, not go backwards. Right.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, I wonder about that. That's something that we didn't think much about. When talking about this, it's just, you know, it seems like automation would be the conversation we're having, not going back to full service. But maybe this is an antidote to automation. Maybe they see this coming and they're trying to stop it with laws. I'm not sure. 847 says the state will never figure this out. They can't figure out the pension without raising taxes. That's a good point. So you don't have a lot of faith in the state government. 312-981-7200. So we're automating everything, and this woman wants to go back to 50 years, and it's going to go up 50 cents easy. A lot of 50s in there. 630 says, there are other states that have full gas service gas stations. Oregon's just one of them. Thank you, Marty. 312 says, if they're truly serious, then make it mandatory that you have an attending at the gas station, but it's up to you whether or not you want to use them. It's possible. They do that. That's the system that's in some of the states that was mentioned a little bit earlier. If I pull up with five-gallon cans to fill, will they take them out of my car, fill them up, and put them back in my car? Yeah, probably. 312 says, just have an option like McDonald's. I can go inside if I choose. Yeah. 630 says, I will not use the self-serve checkouts in stores. First, they don't work. And second, it's taking jobs away from people. Yeah, Marty, I was at Jewel today. I'm getting a different conversation because we've been talking about this on the show the last couple weeks about retail. I don't know what it is about the self-checkout line at the Jewel, but they keep the voice on. That's the worst. The ones when they keep the voice on. $3.99. Please put item in bagging area. Please put item in bagging area. Like they're taunting you. I don't know how people don't punch the machine. I had six items, and it took me 20 minutes to scan it, take it out, put it back. You go to the other stores, maybe like a Target, it's a little quicker. I feel like they need to get on the same page when it comes to the systems. That makes me want to just get all of my groceries, put them all back in my arms, and walk over to a cashier and say, I'm never leaving again. Never going automated. This does not work. Please scan again. They accuse you in that moment of being a shoplifter. Please do not put items that have not been scanned. Relax. 312-981-7200. There's so many texts. This is really grabbing people's attention. 773 said there was a time working class didn't mean low wage. Justin, yeah, I hear you. I'm fortunate to live right on the Wisconsin border, and I go out of my way to buy absolutely nothing in Illinois. That's ridiculous. 217 says, is someone pumped gas for me? Am I supposed to trust them with my cash or credit card? Definitely not. There's a lot of questions about the credit card. 630 says, gas stations make pennies on the gallon. How are they going to pay someone $15 an hour? That's a good point. 815 says, in my small town, there's a full-service gas station, and it's 12 cents more per gallon than the other two stations in town. There you go. That's an interesting point. Would you pay 12 cents more per gallon to get full service? 773 says the state won't figure this out. The state won't figure out the issues faced by small businesses. They don't care. Training costs, new costs for small business. These kids, there's so many options here. Who's going to want to put themselves at risk at 3 a.m. at a 24-hour station in Chicago? The attendants would have to come out from behind bulletproof glass. Yeah, I agree on that. 217 said Monty Python would have a field day with the great gas-pumping debacle. Dorothy, what do you think? Would you do full service?
Well, yeah, I used to do when I was a kid. First of all, my dad used to always tip them. Mm-hmm. So you have to deal with that. But secondly, they were always mechanics. So they would check your oil, check your...
windshield wiper, fluid.
Air. Yeah, right, so, I mean, right. That's what full service was about. It wasn't just pumping gas. Your windshield wipers.
I like that idea, don't you, Dorothy? I can't tell you how many times I probably end up at a gas station regardless trying to put air into a tire.
Well, that's great, but you don't have service stations anymore. They're just plain old gas stations. You can't find a mechanic. Right. So what if you had a problem? You got to go to a dealership.
Yeah, you're right. Dorothy, good point. Score one for the full service. Dorothy, 312-981-7200. 630 says, let's be more like New Jersey, said no one ever. Oh, 630 says, what about the stations in the bad neighborhoods? I don't know. 773, back to the credit card stuff. 630 says, I'm a firefighter and there is a danger in pumping your own gas. There we go. There have been several people that have caused fires from static electricity while on their cell phones. I haven't heard this. It's the kind of stuff that we want to know. George, you going full service or are you staying with the self-service?
I'm staying with self-service.
Yeah, why?
You know what? It's not a problem. I've gotten used to it over the years. I'm 62 years old. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling it's going to raise gasoline prices. And it is specifically designed to create more revenue for the state of Illinois.
Right.
Not only through payroll taxes, but like I said, perhaps even the people pumping the gas will need to be certified.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure how that would work, but that would definitely be something that would have to go into play that you get certified, and then that would cost more money, and then there's going to be a tax on top. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? Personally, I can't afford any more taxes. I feel like the state of Illinois, like many other states, not just Illinois, continuously take money from me.
Yeah, you're not getting an argument from me, and you can hear me on this program.
Really quick, I own a motorhome. Mm-hmm. I store it in a storage lot. 2020, now because I'm storing this vehicle, they're charging me 9% tax storage fees.
George, here's a question for you, because I want to do this later in the program, in the 9 o'clock hour. I want to talk about, you know, because tomorrow is the official start, the primaries, Democrats are going to be doing the primarying, the president's on the rallies, he's in New Hampshire right now. Beyond the candidates or what side you're on, I don't care about that. What's the issue? What's the one issue that takes you to the polls that you say this is the one issue above all? Is it money? Is it taxes?
It's taxes. It's money because they keep taking. I feel like they take from me, who I've worked my entire life since I was 14. And as soon as I find a way to, as an example, save some money, they take it from you.
Yeah. All right, good.
And my income doesn't go up.
Yeah, right. That's right.
Hey, now maybe, you know what? I have no problem paying higher taxes if the state wants to put me on a pension plan.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks, George. That's a good point, but George is right. Money is what motivates him to get to the polls. Paul, what do you think? Paul, you like self-service or are you going to stick with the self-service?
Well, I'm just going to tell you about my experience.
Okay.
As a motorcyclist, mm-hmm. Universally, the fellow hands me the nozzle rather than touch my bike himself.
Okay. All right.
So why is he even there? All right.
Yeah,
number one.
Right.
Number two, now, you know, this is having, I've traveled around the country quite a bit. The second issue has to do with my credit card. Half of the time, the fellow sticks it into the pump right in front of my nose. I could have done that myself.
Right.
The other half of the time, in the older gas stations, the fellow takes it into the office, does whatever he wants to do with it, and then brings it back out to me with a receipt wrapped around it. I do not like that at all.
I'm with you on that too. I don't like doing it unless it's at the pump, right?
Yeah. So you know, myself, I don't see the point of it.
Right.
I know how to pump gas.
So true. At the end of the day, that might be the last word. That's exactly. I know how to pump gas. All right. 312-981-7200. Thanks, everyone, texting in. There's a ton of texts here. I'll try to get through them throughout the night. But I'm excited to hear how passionate everybody is about it. It's good. And like I said, with George, we talked about just the taxes and money. I want to do that conversation a little bit later about what's the one issue that takes you to the polls. Not personalities, not the overall policy concepts of any candidates. What's that one issue that's important to you that you're like, I'm going to the polls and I'm voting with that issue? 312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman, stay with us. Really getting a lot of conversation here. 262 says, Justin, I'd be all in on full service. I always seem to smell like gas after filling up my car when I don't get any on me. I'll even do a 15 cents more per gallon. Be fine. It'd be worth it. A clean windshield would be nice, too. Skippy, you used to pump gas?
Yeah, I pumped gas when I was younger, and the station I worked at only had like four pumps. I carried one of those coin changer things, and I carried a stack of bills in my hand to make change. But most people paid by cash back then.
Right.
Occasionally, we had people with credit cards. You had to stop, go back into the building, run their card, so on and so forth. And also, you had to wipe their headlights, their taillights, you had to clean their windshield, you had to check their oil. If they were down on oil, then you had to sell them oil. Okay, while you're doing all this, you've got other people waiting.
Honking
this is only a station with four pumps.
Right.
Imagine now with the multiple pumps they have in places. Back then, you got paid your hourly wage. There was nothing else.
Right.
Nowadays, you have to have the health insurance and all sorts of stuff. I mean, you know, people got away with paying kids cash to do that kind of thing. And then the reason I left doing that was because there was a rash of holdups in the area with people with shotguns.
Yeah. See, that's so skippy. I'm sorry that happened and that you had to live with that kind of hanging over your head, and I'm glad you left. That's what I'm hearing from people. I'm hearing safety concerns. I'm hearing money concerns, not wanting to pay extra. And I'm also hearing efficiency concerns. Now, I would suggest, let's say from an efficiency standpoint, that they get figured out. I always sing the praises, and you do too, of what they do at the Portillo's drive-thru. I'm amazed that they were able to make an efficient experience out of what is usually pretty inefficient. And a lot of that has to do with they've got the credit card scanners on their belt, right? Now they're not, they're doing cards throughout through the whole thing. They got people walking out to you. I wonder if a combination of that plus more efficiency and strategy when it comes to making sure people don't wait in lines, plus the possibility that maybe this doesn't cost more. I don't know. That's the part I can't promise, you know. But like one of our texters said, what would you do for 10 cents extra? 10 cents extra on the gallon? Would you be okay with a windshield cleaning and a oil check? Maybe an air pressure check? I might. 312-981-7200. 815 says, no problems with attendance in Wisconsin. There you go. 815 also has... this sentiment is across. It's another way for Illinois politicians to find profit and line their pockets. I don't know. I know we're cynical about our politicians. I'm with you. I'm ranting on this program every single night about it. But I'm trying to figure out where the scam is in trying to go full service for this representative in Oak Park. So I don't know if going into pensions and Illinois corruption and how you hate one political party over the other has anything to do with the convo. I would say that maybe we just take the idea on its face. I know it's hard to do because that's what corruption does. It's pervasive and it ruins every conversation. It poisons the well. But let's pretend like we live in a utopia. Corruptionless utopia. Like 815. She says, I married the boy that pumped gas across the street from my house. See, it could be a romance story. Valentine's Day weekend? Oh, that's great. Anyway, her voicemail, 773, says, I tried to call my representative, the representative who put this into this bill. Her voicemail is full. not great. Yeah. A lot of great stuff. I pumped gas, says 630, in 1983 to 1986 in the freezing cold. That's why you want full service when it's freezing out. And 773 says, this is just about union membership. More people for the union. I don't know about that. All right, 312-981-7200. Coming up, John Schmitz here, our historian, our resident historian. He joins us every month. I'm going to figure out, like, if the second Monday of the month, whatever. He joins us once a month. This month, we're going to talk about some of the stories that are in his great book, Hidden Chicago Landmarks, that have to do with Black history. It's Black History Month, so we'll talk about that. Also coming up a little bit later, we'll talk a little bit about Mary Wisniewski's piece that was in the Tribune at the end of last week about whether or not to go to wakes and funerals. And this is a story that she talked about the death of her mother, and she used some stats that were pretty alarming about how in the last 5 years, I think it's maybe the last 5 or 10 years, the percentages of people you know they call up and they poll, they're just not going anymore. They're not going to wakes. They're not going to funerals. And Mary talks about how important it was for her and her family that people showed up even for 5 minutes. So maybe we can talk about that, because I get anxious all the time. Maybe it's someone to work with, or maybe it's someone, you know, close with, whatever it might be. I'm always anxious about whether it should be the wake or the funeral, whether I should just send something or not, how do it go, like all this kind of stuff. So maybe we could talk about the etiquette of wakes and funerals coming up on the program. 312-981-7200. It's Justin Kaufman. I'm here till 11 o'clock, so stay with us. Excited to get all these texts about the gas stations. I mean, it's crazy. Thank you so much for texting. I'll try to get to them throughout the show. 773 says, when it comes to wakes and funerals, I wish I could go. I've been ill myself. I've missed 6 in the past 3 weeks. Oof. That's a lot to miss. But yeah, we talk about 847 says, a lot of funeral homes these days have open bars. Maybe they should, to help people feel more at ease when they attend wakes. About that seems like that's a recipe for trouble. But we're talking about wakes and funerals and etiquette coming up a little bit later in the program. Also, the question whether or not what issue above all other issues brings you to the polls when it's election season. 312-981-7200. In studio, our resident historian, John Schmitz. He is the author of Hidden Chicago Landmarks. He joins us once a month here to talk about some of the great stories that he has written about in his great book. John, good to see you.
Glad to be here, Justin.
Yeah, so this is February, and this is Black History Month, and we thought you've got a lot of great stories about African Americans who have a little hidden history, is some stuff that's I wouldn't say underreported necessarily, but stories that the whole book is really about stories that haven't been told as much.
Well, I'll tell you something about the underreporting. First person we're talking about was Jesse Binga. And in 1980, I was teaching at the Betsy Ross School at 60th and Wabash, and African-American neighborhood, and he had lived a few blocks from there. None of the kids knew who he was.
Yeah, well, I'll be the first to say Jesse Binga.
There was a book about him just came out the last year, so he's getting some more attention. Okay. But anyway, the kids didn't know who he was at that time 40 years ago, and he has gotten more attention since then. And his house does have a Chicago Tribune marker now. But anyway, to get to the man himself, he was born in Detroit, 1865, and he scuffled around a lot of odd jobs. He's a barber for a while. It's his father's occupation. And in 1893... he came to Chicago for the World's Fair, like Walt Disney's father and a bunch of other people. There's a lot of jobs around with the World's Fair. Well, around that time and then into the early 20th century, this was the time of the Great Migration. You had a lot of African Americans were getting fed up with the conditions down south, and they had opportunities in the northern cities where they wouldn't suffer as much prejudice. So a lot of African Americans were moving up north.
Yeah, from Mississippi, from Alabama, places like that.
Yeah. Now, Chicago had already had a fairly small black population, 2%, 5%, something like that in the early 20th century. And the area where the African Americans lived were on the near south side from about 22nd Street, Cermak Road, down around 35th, 39th, on either side of State Street. They called it the Black Belt. It was a narrow area. But with all these people coming in, they needed some place to live. And so the area where the new residents were started to expand out sideways in various directions.
Right.
And this panic a lot of the white people, because it's a time of prejudice.
And this is also a time when your neighborhood was really ethnically driven.
Oh, meaning, yeah.
You had a German neighborhood, an Irish neighborhood. I read a great book about this, and it was all about the sort of near South Side neighborhoods. And as African Americans who were really just shoved into one area, even went a block over, these roving gangs and other things that were protecting those neighborhoods did not like.
Oh, yeah, that's the 1919 race riot.
Right.
But this is, around the same era, going back a little. Well, what Jesse Binger did, he got on the ground floor of this type of thing. He would buy a property at rock bottom price for one of these panicky whites that wanted to get out. And then he'd fix it up, and he put his own sweat equity in. He'd do most of the work himself so he could save money. And if it was a big place, he might subdivide it, and then he would either rent it out or he would sell it to another.
And this was a big deal because the buildings that were being rented to African Americans at the time were terrible. They were just awful. Like trying to shove as many people in, and like we said,
Now he was providing better living conditions for them. So naturally, he became prosperous as time went by, and he was making so much money in 1908. He became the first African-American in Chicago to open a privately owned bank. It was called the Binger Bank. It was at 36th and State. It was, as I said, it was Chicago's first black-owned bank. And it was very successful with this. He started operating his real estate business through the bank. As a matter of fact, if you look through old copies of the Broad Axe, which was a black newspaper then, or the Chicago Defender, I've got one of the ads in the book. It told all the things that Jesse Binger's bank would do for you, all the real estate transactions that even manage your property for you. If you were a non-resident owner, they'd charge you a fee, and you didn't have to worry about anything.
A lot of things that the white banks weren't doing for black people at the time.
Now, Jesse decided in 1910, he decided he would go into politics. And he ran for a seat on the Cook County Board of Commissioners. And 4 years before Ferdinand Barnett, Ida Wells Barnett's husband, had run for judge, and he'd been defeated. Well, Jesse runs in 1910. And he runs as a Republican. That was the party of choice for African Americans in those days. And he lost. And that was the only time he tried for elective office. But, he was doing okay, making a lot of money and so on.
Right.
So 1917. He decides to move into a new house. And it was at 5922, it's King Drive today, then it was called South Park Avenue. Well, it's a white neighborhood. Hmm. He's the first African-American in the neighborhood. And he starts getting death threats. People start throwing bombs at the place. The local cops were kind of slow about this. They, they didn't care. So finally, Binger used his own money, and he hired 24-hour guards to guard his property. And his friends told him, why don't you move out of there? And he said, why should I move? He said, I am an American citizen, a Christian, and a property owner. No man can make me a traitor or a coward. No power on earth can change my faith in God. I'm going to defend my home and my personal liberty, the extent of my life. I have just as much right to live in my home in Washington Park as anybody else.
Yeah.
And it took years before the violence finally stopped. And after a while, he was settled there. Well, 1920s, this was the big prosperous time for him. And again, he builds now another building, the Binger Arcade at State and 35th. And it has five stories. It has stores, professional buildings. It has a dance hall. He recharges his bank. Now it's the Binger State Bank. And he's celebrated as the richest black man in Chicago, and probably, at that time, the richest black man in the whole United States.
Hmm.
But 1929, stock market crashes. Binger had been planning to try and get a charter as a national bank. Stock market, of course, wipes things out. Binger State Bank was wiped out. Binger himself loses money on this. He's brought up to trial for embezzlement. Two trials. The first trial was a hung jury. The second trial, he was convicted. He served some time. There's a lot of evidence that it was trumped up charges, that there was racial prejudice was involved in this. But he did go to prison. And he was finally let out on parole. And in 1941, Governor Dwight Green gave him a pardon. Hmm. Because of the way things had been done. Well, he spent his final years in his neighborhood, still living in the house, And he spent his final years as the janitor at St. Anselm's Catholic Church, which was the neighborhood, $15 a week, this multimillionaire. Wow. And he died. Yeah, he died in 1950. And today there's a Chicago Tribune marker in front of his house.
On King Drive.
Yeah, yeah. And a book came out last year about Jesse being a finally, after all these years, somebody wrote a whole book about it. And the title of the book is, I forget the subtitle, but Binga is the main title. Mm. That's the thing to look for if you want to find out more about
Jesse Binga, and you can go find it. So they do have a tribute marker. Most a lot of places don't in your book, but this place does have a tribute
marker.
That one has a tribute marker.
And as I said, when I was teaching in a neighborhood 40 years ago, nobody knew about it. Few people knew about it, but not many.
Historian and author John Schmidt, the book is called Hidden Chicago Landmarks, a former Chicago high school teacher who has written a great book about hidden Chicago landmarks. We're talking about Black History Month. That was Jesse Binga. We'll take a break. Mahalia Jackson and Joe Lewis, their stories coming up next here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200. John Schmidt is here, our resident historian, the author of Hidden Chicago Landmarks, telling some of the great stories. I saw today in the news, I was going to mention to you, that one of the stories you had about the Niles Leaning Tower. It's up for a landmark status. It was in the paper today about landmark status. It was in the Tribune.
Oh, we got to talk more about that in the future.
Yeah, we will. Yeah. It's in the book. A lot of great stories about the hidden history of our area. John Schmidt, of course, a great historian in Chicago and a one-time Chicago high school teacher. Let's talk about, we're talking about Black History Month. We just talked about Jesse Binga. If I were going to do the music tournament for the best Chicago musicians of all time, Mahalia Jackson would be a number one seed.
Oh, definitely.
She is the great gospel singer. She finds her way into your book.
Oh, yeah. Her house, northwest corner, Indiana Avenue and 84th Street. Well, she moved to Chicago from the South during the Great Migration. She was 16 years old when she came, 1927. And at first, she opened a beauty salon, flower shop. But, of course, her real talent was as a gospel singer. Now, she used to like to practice her singing while she was at night, while she was cooking and cleaning up the house and so on. Well, she was very loud. And the landlord would complain about it. And he said, "Oh, wonderful voice, but, you know, can you tone it down?" "Can't tone it down. That's the way I sing." So she figured, well, she'd go buy an apartment building. And then the landlord wouldn't be bothered by anybody. Well, she gets into the apartment building. The tenants start complaining. "You're a nice lady, you're a great singer, but you're too loud, you know. So what are we going to do?" So she decides, "Well, I got to buy my own house." So 1956 of the year, and she starts looking for a house on the South Side in the Chatham neighborhood around 84th in Indiana, as I said. And there are all kinds of for sale signs in the neighborhood as she's driving along, but every time she goes into a house with the for sale sign, the real estate person would say, "Oh, we just sold this house. That's too bad."
And at this point, she's already famous singer at this point. This is the 50s. She's already a famous singer, so she's being discriminated against.
Yeah,
she's one of the biggest stars in
music.
Yeah,
and also the Supreme Court had passed a law, I think it was 1948, against restrictive covenants where you could not say that the house could only be sold to white people or whatever.
This is how real estate got around it.
It was just sold. It was all white neighborhood. And so finally what she does is she goes to another real estate agent, and finally she gets some cooperation. And there's a white surgeon who was selling his house in northwest corner of Indiana in 84th. And he finds out who's going to buy the house. He says, "I'll be proud to sell to Mahalia Jackson." So she buys the house. $40,000, which is maybe $370,000, $380,000 today's money. Well, she's famous, but the white neighbors complain about it.
"Oh, she's singing too loud?"
No, they are prejudiced.
Oh, they're just prejudiced.
They're just prejudiced. Now, there's a Catholic priest in the neighborhood. He's trying to calm down people. They can't see, calm down. Their home prejudice is still hitting them. She gets hostile phone calls at night. Protest meetings.
She's a gospel singer.
Yeah. Somebody fired bullet holes. Well, I suppose it's an improvement over Jesse Binga's time, because the police at least came out and they guarded her house. She didn't have to hire
her own guards.
But still,
right,
come on. And she says in her autobiography later, I hadn't intended to start a crusade. All I wanted was a nice, pretty home to live in. Well, finally, things kind of settle down. not totally accept. In 1958, Edward R. Murrow's got this program, Person to Person. He goes to celebrities' homes and interviews them in their homes. So Mahalia Jackson gets the idea. She invites some of the white kids from the neighborhood over, have some coffee and cake, and they get a chance to be on TV. And the kids come over, and they're on TV with her. And so she finally figures she's being accepted in the neighborhood. Well, she might have been accepted, but still the people have got their own prejudices. And somebody said, well, integration is the time between when the first blacks move in and the last whites move out. And that's what happened in the neighborhood. The white people moved out within a few years. And later on, 1970, as she was getting older, she moved an apartment in Hyde Park. She kept the house vacant for a year or so. And then she sold it to a young banker by the name of Roland Burris, who, of course, becomes very, very well known.
Roland Burris bought Mahalia Jackson's house?
Roland Burris did buy Mahalia Jackson's awesome. House. And Mahalia said at the time, well, the white people swore that we ruined the neighborhood. She's in her autobiography. But, you know, the neighborhood still looks nice. And it was in 1966, she said this. And it's still a wonderful neighborhood. It's still a beautiful area on the South Side. So
there you go, Mahalia Jackson.
Prejudice
story
doesn't pay.
Also, I don't know. I would think at that time to have a celebrity like Mahalia Jackson living on your block would transcend race, but I guess not.
There's still a lot of crazy people around.
Yeah.
Well, thank God we're learning something in the intervening years. Now, Joe Lewis.
All right, Joe Lewis.
The next person. And this is another.
Before I do that, John Schmidt is with us. Hidden Chicago Landmarks is the book. It's Black History Month, and we're talking about some of the hidden stories, hidden Chicago history stories that are in John's book. All right, Joe Lewis.
Okay, yeah, Joe Lewis, of course, he's born in Alabama. He grew up in Detroit, and when he died, he was living in Las Vegas. But when he was heavyweight champion, he lived in Chicago.
Really?
Yeah, and he lived at 4320 South Michigan Avenue. It's funny, when I was taking a picture of the book a couple years ago, you know, man came out from the house, he said, you know, why are you taking a picture of my house? Real estate or something?
Get off my lawn, right.
Yeah, Joe Lewis lived here. Joe Lewis, the boxer, he didn't know that. There was no tribute. And as far as I know, there's still no tribute
well,
mark on that.
Because we
one.
All know Joe Lewis has got the huge monument in Detroit.
Yeah, the big fist.
Yeah, the big fist. Yeah. And all that. I would never think Joe Lewis had any connection to Chicago.
Well, no, what happened? He was born Joe Lewis Sparrow, and he dropped his last name because he didn't want his mom to know when he's amateur fighting. And he came to Chicago. His manager was John Roxborough, was a gambler in Detroit. And the reason he moved to Chicago was Jack Blackburn was a famous trainer in Chicago, and Roxborough wanted Joe Lewis to be trained by this guy, so he moved to Chicago. And he lived in an apartment off King Drive, and for a while, 1934, he started dating a lady by the name of Marva Trotter. She worked for the Defender. And that same year, well, 1935, one day, I think it was September, Joe went to New York, married Marva, Went to work then, knocked out Max Barrett, his job, and then came back and rejoined himself
job.
At Marvin.
Right.
Yeah, I got to go to work, honey. I'll be back. I'll try to be back quick.
Right.
Anyway, four rounds. Well, anyway, Joe and Marta had first moved to a place called the Rosenwald at 47th and Michigan Avenue. Still there. Julius Rosenwald, white philanthropist, had built this place. Well, getting back to Joe's house on Michigan Avenue, in 1936, he lost a famous bout to Max Schmeling.
Yeah.
But next year, 1937, he knocks out the Cinderella man, James J. Braddock at Comiskey Park, becomes heavyweight champ. And Joe, in his autobiography, tells about the fact that after, you know, Marvin had not gone to the fight, she'd stayed and listened on the radio. And Joe, in his autobiography, says, yeah, it took me forever to drive over there to our place. And by that time, he was living at this place at 4320 South Michigan Avenue. He said, yeah, when we got home, the whole neighborhood's out there. We had to keep coming out a couple of times and wave to people. So, you know, it's kind of hard to say when he bought this place, but the 1940 census says he bought it for $7,500.
Wow.
Which is like $140,000 today, and they had five. They lived in one unit, and he rented out the other five. Well, anyway, he's living in here, and World War II, of course, starts. And Joe goes in the Army, and he mostly fights exhibitions. And when the war is over, his skills are kind of deteriorated. And he has a few fights, but 1949, he retires. Well, Joe's marriage had also deteriorated over the years. You see, the ladies like Joe, and Joe liked the ladies, too. So in 1945, he gets divorced from Marva. They remarried the next year, and they get divorced for good in 1949. And she kept the house and the two kids. And it's this last year is kind of sad. He trusted too many people with his money. He had back taxes. He had to pay the IRS, and they came after him. And he had to make a boxing comeback when he showed him. It was kind of embarrassing. And he had health problems. He wound up as a greeter in a Las Vegas casino. And he died in 1981. But the building, of course, is privately owned. There is still no marker in front of it, I think. But the only thing I can think of is his favorite local golf course, which was Pipe O' Peace in Riverdale, was changed to the Joe Louis, the Champ Golf Course. And it's one of my favorites because I got my first eagle over there. So that's the memorial we got to Joe Louis.
4320 South Michigan. All right. Awesome. That's great. John Schmidt joins us once a month to talk about hidden Chicago landmarks. His book is called Hidden Chicago Landmarks. John, it's great to have you here every month to do these stories and to find out more about Chicago history that's not necessarily, you know, in the textbooks. These are great stories, and thanks for coming in tonight. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
312-981-7200. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock. Great to have John Schmidt in studio. Comes down to, and gives us these great stories from his book, Hidden Chicago Landmarks. I think this is the fourth or fifth one we've done with him. It's great. It's always great. The one he did with the fugitives last time through. This one, oh, great. How great is that? Joe Louis. I didn't know Joe Louis lived in Chicago. You know, obviously so well known, and they make a big deal about the fifth statue in Detroit. Yeah, and Mahalia Jackson, too. Mahalia Jackson, we knew she's from Chicago, but I could just imagine one of the best gospel singers of a generation, considered the, gave birth to the gospel movement, right? She's too loud for her neighbors. I just love that she needed to find a house that she could be loud in singing while she was doing, you know, watching. I don't know what you're doing, like cleaning the house while she's singing. That's great. 312-981-7200. All right, so let's get into some of the conversations we were starting before John came in. Tomorrow night around this time, we're probably going to know who is the front runner. After the New Hampshire primary. This is going to be interesting because they hold their first primary tomorrow. Today, the president unveiled his proposed budget for 2020-2021. And there's a lot of politics right now. And it's not just about the cult of personality. It's about the policies, and it's about the issues that they stand for. And it's hard. It's hard when you're looking at these huge state, you know, seven or eight people on stage at one time, or hard when it's all about everything that the president tweets out or speaks at a rally gets fact-checked. And it made me think about that. If we can get away from politics for a second and get away from Democrats or Republicans and all that kind of stuff and really just talk about the issues. On this program, I hear all the time issues about taxes, about pensions, about retirement, about money. Are those the big issues for you? 312-981-7200. What's the one issue above all? And that could be money. It could be social. It could be issues that, you know, are health care, abortion. Other issues that maybe others aren't thinking about. Student loan forgiveness, debt forgiveness. What are the issues that are going to get you to the polls? You don't have to tell me who you're voting for. You don't have to tell me party. It's not even about that. It's about what's the one thing that moves you to say, you know what, this is the thing that gets me to come out to the polls, to come out on election day. 312-981-7200. What is it? We have that conversation coming up here. And we also want to talk about the wakes and funeral stuff. We'll do that next. But it is interesting because there are some personalities that are on the stage that are just all about the issues. They're all about the policies. Maybe they don't have the pizzazz as some of the other candidates. And today, that was a big, big part of the budget proposal that came out from the president, was looking at all of the issues that were in there, how they were going to be funded, what was going to be touched or not touched when it comes to entitlement programs. The military. 312-981-7200. Let's get into it. 269 says, the one issue for me, I'm an independent. I campaign for both Republicans and Democrats, but I just need a new blood. All right? So you'd say new blood. not this president. Which, again, I'm trying to make, I don't want to make this about, I think, I will say this. I think over time, we get so caught up in the mechanisms of the daily political grind that it does become a cult of personality, that we don't care at all about the policies and the procedures and the issues and all the things that that matter to Americans because we don't like the personality that is either running or that is sitting in the chair. So I will say for this, that's low hanging fruit. If you're going to text in and say, you know what, I don't want to get this president out of here, low hanging fruit. Doesn't count. I want you to think a little bit harder. Because then, you know what that becomes? That becomes just standard partisan fare. You say you don't like this candidate or you don't like this guy. That's not what it get at. Got to go deeper than that. What are the issues that get you to the polls? Mike, why don't we start? What about you? What's the one issue above all the other issues that gets you out to on election day? You there, Mike?
My issue is climate change.
Okay.
Most important, I think, for the future, not only now, I mean, we see it. We see what's happening before our eyes. And for me, my grandkids, it has to be climate change because that's the most important thing. Yeah. You know, get rid of the fossil fuels, going electric or solar. That's really important.
Does it bum you out, Mike, that because of the way that the political system works now, both parties, it seems like that issue gets short thrifted a lot. Like that doesn't sometimes doesn't even get mentioned in any of the debates.
No, and there's only a couple of candidates that are really intriguing to me.
Yeah.
Okay, and it doesn't matter if it's Republican or Democrat. You know, I've voted both sides.
Right.
And, you know, I'm open-minded, but I'm thinking about the future. You know, I mean, we don't want to see this planet disappear.
Yeah, it's a great point.
And we're seeing it now.
I appreciate it, Mike. Thank you. Thanks for the call. And I can hear the passion in your voice. 312-981-7200. 773 text in says legal immigration. That's the one issue that's going to get 773 out to the polls. I can see that. Obviously, there's been a lot made of that. And you can see, I think there's a couple of others, too. 224 says, the thing that'll get me to the polls is for someone to legalize all the DACA kids. So there you go. Maybe on the same page, 773 and 224. Similar. But of course, you know, I think you hear both sides of the aisle talking about that issue. That's a big issue. And climate change as well. 312 says, if you're remotely intelligent and you're voting for the presidency, the only question you need to ask yourself is, are you better off today than you were 3 years ago? It's a great question. And that, of course, is going to be played out over the summertime. And that question can go a long way, though, because there are other issues when you think about the big issues that are important to you. It's hard to just say you're just about your well-being. Let's go to Anthony. Anthony, what do you think? What's the biggest issue? What's going to take you to the polls this primary and coming up in November?
Well, I think at the end of the day, I mean, it's got to be money because right. Anything else that you're looking to do is going to take money to do it. Like the guy with climate change, that's got to be paid for.
Right.
You know, I'm for climate change, but I don't think people should lose their jobs and industries be overregulated in order to accommodate it. I saw where the United States had zero emissions, it would have very little effect on the overall picture of the climate anyway.
Right, because other countries
aren't. Especially when you get places like China and India that could care less.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point, too, because there's a dance, because you take what you just said, what we're talking about climate change, talking about are you better off than 3 years ago? All that has to be in there. It's like a dance. They all have to be in concert with each other.
Well, I think that's the number one question is, you know, are you doing better now than you were 3 years ago? Yeah. How do you feel, you know, when you get up in the morning? Does your future look better than it did? You know, presidency isn't about whether or not you like the person and would have him over for dinner. That is completely irrelevant.
Yeah, that's a great point.
You know, you don't have to like him. He just has to be an effective leader.
I like it. Thanks, Anthony. Appreciate it. Yeah. All right. Let's keep going on this. Jan, you're up. Jan, what do you want to say? What's the one issue? What's the issue that you want that's bigger than any of the other issues when it comes to this election season?
Teaching for over 20 years and having two teenage daughters. it's the character and role model
okay.
of what he represents for our children of the future.
Okay, great. So you say it's you want someone who has character and is a role model.
The one they want, even my children, we tend to be Christian, is honesty.
Honesty, there you go. All right, Jan, thanks for that. Honesty. I don't know if honesty is an... I guess it is. I'm with Jan on that. I guess honesty is an issue. Hard for politicians, I'll tell you that. If any of them are going to run on the honesty platform, they all got skeletons in their closet, right? 312-981-7200. Let's see. Like I said, I'm trying to screen, when I take a pause, I'm screening some of the things that get very specific about the candidates or the parties. That's not what this is about, guys. I really want to know about what you think the biggest issues are. 773 says, I'm going to vote against anyone who wants to manipulate our economic system, like the Green New Deal. All right. I guess you could be anti. I'd much rather 773 for you to call in or to text and say, what's the issue that you're positive about? What's the one thing you're passionate about? Because, I don't know, there's too much anti in this world. You can be against somebody else's idea, but I think this is an exercise for us to figure out what our passion is, not going against somebody else's, right? 312-981-7200. No incumbents. That's what 815 just goes, no incumbents. I like that. Let's go to Jane. Jane, what do you like? What's the issue that's going to take you out to the polls this year?
Well, they're interrelated. Number one would have to be social justice, but that's interrelated with climate change mm-hmm. because climate change disproportionately affects the poor, which, you know, is a social justice issue.
Yeah, right. That's great. That idea, that issue moves you. It takes you to the polls. So if one candidate is like, that's what I do, that's my thing, you're into it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, basically, anyone who is not the current president is more interested in social justice than he is. I'm not saying that as a, you know, yeah. I don't like him. No, it's his policies have proven that he is not interested in social equality and, you know, wage disparity. And, I want somebody who cares about lifting the poor out of poverty and defending the voiceless and also protecting the environment.
Yeah, I like that, Jane. Thank you. Now, I can make a strong argument as somebody who pays attention enough to this stuff. And has been on both sides of the aisle and luckily been in a position where I can talk to a lot of my listeners, that they would suggest that the current administration is doing a lot for social justice. The president himself would tell you that in the State of the Union. Now, I'm going to get into political stuff. That's not what we're doing, trying to get at the people who are running. I want to know about the issues you care about. Sally, what's the issue you care about that's going to take you to the polls?
Hi there.
Hi.
You know, when I was young, and I'm not anymore, I voted on one issue. I was pro-life, and that's all I voted on. Mm-hmm. And as I have aged, I realized, well, who do I think I am, and why should my thoughts be legislated? But from that, I went toward the Supreme Court.
Okay.
And that, especially when a young person says, I'm not sure, and what do you think? You know, the most important thing and the lifelong seats that the president makes for Supreme Court justices forever. So regardless of what the issues are, we all have a vested interest in which way we individually want the court to move. So, you know, if you think it's too liberal or you think it's too conservative. I really look to that and all the personalities out of it. I feel like it's my job to help give the voiceless voice and the hungry food. That's not something that is easily legislated in one term or two terms, but the direction the Supreme Court goes is can be long lasting.
I appreciate that call, Sally. That was awesome. That's exactly the spirit of this thing. You know, that there are some things that can't be legislated, and at the same time, you know, the future is all about the Supreme Court and justices, and we've seen that in the last couple of years. In the last decade, probably, we've seen a lot of the justices turn over. All right, let's go to Bill. Bill, what's your issue? What's the issue that's going to take you to the polls?
The economy, as I was speaking to a gentleman prior to coming on, just sort of... To some point, all ships are trying to rise, and everybody has a point of view. I get it, but I guess just speaking to your screener, it has more to do with the economy and somehow people to their decisions. So I believe people's decisions are born out of how well the economy is doing.
There you go. I like that, Bill. Thank you. Thank you for that. We've heard a lot. We heard money. We heard the economy. Let's go to Mike. Mike, what do you like? What's the one thing that's going to take you to the polls this year?
I think the one thing that's going to take me to polls is social issues. And the reason I mention that is because there's a lot of times where there's social problems, and I feel like Republicans tend to lean towards getting rid of them rather than fixing them. And I think... you know, I kind of look at that as throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and that we shouldn't do that. We should address the issues that are not working about them and improve them, because if you pretend a social issue doesn't exist and you just, you know, dump the program, then there's other consequences, and yeah, both, you know, fiscally as well as socially.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Mike. All right. Very thoughtful, you guys. Thank you. 312-981-7200. I got a ton of texts as well. We're going to take a break here. But what is the issue? I've heard a lot of them brought up here, but has yours? 312-981-7200. What's the issue that is going to take you to both vote in the primary and also or vote in the general? In 2020, what's the issue that gets you to the poll? That's the question tonight. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. We're talking about the issues in 2020. Tomorrow will be the kickoff of the first primary in the Democratic race for the White House. And, of course, the president as well doing campaign stops in New Hampshire tonight. And he also put together his first budget proposal for 2021. So politics in full swing tonight. But I'm not interested in who you're going to vote for. I find that to be, I don't know. That's your business. But I think it's very interesting to hear from everybody about what's the issue, the one issue that's your issue that is going to take you to the polls in November, that is going to bring you out. Doesn't matter who you vote for. I don't care. That's your business. But what's the issues that right now you say that's what I want to hear these candidates talking about? Jim, what's your issue?
I'm worried about the country drifting towards national socialism.
Mm-hmm. Just in general, like it's national socialism.
Yes, the corporate socialism, mm-hmm. where the money talks, money rules,
right?
Money dominates.
Yeah, I agree with you.
And it controls the candidates and also the media's. You know, they.
Yep.
All sides of media. So about that.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Jim. I agree. And I think that that's an issue that you'll hear a lot on the text. So I can skip a lot of the texts who say that they're interested in issues of the economy, but more importantly about how it kind of plays out. Like someone said, social or wealth inequality. All right, 773 says wealth inequality. The haves and the have-nots. And as that gap widens in this country, not particularly because of one party or another, it's a shared responsibility, is that an issue you care about? 312-981-7200. 630 says Social Security. Yeah. Will we have enough money? 773 says pro-life. Abortion. That'd be the biggest issue to get you out. 312-981-7200. I'm getting to all these texts. I'm trying to. 219 says, I'm with Jan. I'm not seeking perfect. I'm seeking integrity. I would vote for a Republican or Democrat who had a strong positive role model for the youth in this country. That's great. Let's see. 312 says, healthcare that is truly affordable for individuals, not covered under group plans, truly affordable, says 312. 217 says, a demonstrative move towards renewable non-fossil energy. That would be it, huh? 847 says, healthcare, no question. There are no other questions. It's healthcare. 630 says, judicial picks. Two more Supreme Court justices and another 150 judges. 630 says, the rising cost of healthcare is my concern. You know the saying, if you don't have your health, well, if you can't afford to maintain that health, nothing else really matters. 312-981-7200, security. We as Americans, when I was a kid, America felt like we were secure in our homes. We felt like winners of the globe. I'd like to get that back in our lives. Let's go to Jeff. Jeff, what's your issue? What's the one issue that's going to take you out to the polls this year?
It will be taxes and term limits. Both of them, I think, will make a big difference for Illinois, especially Illinois, and for the country.
Yeah.
Everybody can talk about reform, but until we put term limits in to keep out long-term politicians
who
are corruptible, nothing will change. And that includes Republicans as well as Democrats.
No, you saw it. You know, you saw it. It was amazing to me, Jeff, how many senators were around for the Clinton-Lewinsky impeachment. You know, like on both sides of the aisle, Democrats and Republicans. I was like, these guys are still in office? Like, they're just there. And I think that that's an issue. And I could say the same for the state of Illinois and the state house as well.
Illinois has to have it. And taxes in Illinois, they refuse to acknowledge the problem. They refuse to acknowledge the pension issue. There is not just a population drain out of the state, but a brain drain as well. And it doesn't really impact Chicago that much, but the rest of the state, it does.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how you get people educated. I do know this, that people talk about social justice and pay equality.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen more economic development in the South Side and the South Suburbs in the last 4 years than the previous 10 to 15.
Yeah, there you
go. It's been amazing.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for the call. 847 says, pro-life is more than just abortion, Justin. It's also taking care of each other, especially the most vulnerable. Another vote for health care. So a lot of great stuff tonight. And those are great because we can maybe build on that. Together, we can have conversations about these issues, and you kind of set the agenda for the conversations we can have on this program about the election season. I hear the environment. I hear healthcare. I hear pro-life. I hear taxes and money and the economy, security. A lot of those issues, of course, are going to play out in the campaign. But that I feel like it's our responsibility as Americans to get these conversations, get these politicians to talk about the conversation. Far too often we get our popcorn out. We love to watch them debate. We love to watch them fight. We love to watch them make fun of each other, all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, we're the ones who are in charge of what we want our politicians talking about. So hopefully we can do that. 312-981-7200. All right. So we'll take a break here. And then we'll come back. And I want to talk about this Mary Wisniewski piece that was in the Tribune at the end of last week. It's really about, she just lost her mother. And it was about how she had seen some alarming statistics that younger generations and I just people in general in the last 5 to 10 years have stopped going to wakes and funerals. And I've had this conversation in this office as well about what do you do? Do you go to wake if you're not close? Do you go to wake and you go to a funeral? I've had this, we've talked about this on this program. I've been like a lot of you, and it's just, you know, it's just the way life works. I've had a lot of wakes and funerals to go to in the last couple months. Got another one coming up here. And just, you know, what Mary was saying is just how important it is to go and to be a part of it, even if it's just for a moment, even if it's just to say I'm sorry. I feel like way too often we use social media instead of actually having to go face-to-face. But let's talk about the etiquette of wakes and funerals coming up here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock. Stay with us. Justin Kaufman here with you on WGN Radio. 312-981-7200 with you till 11 o'clock tonight. You heard last hour we talked about what issue, what above all other issues, going to bring you to the polls this week. Great conversation. Or not just this week, but this year. Also before that, John Schmidt was here, a historian, to talk about some hidden history when it comes to Black History Month. In the first hour, we talked about whether or not Illinois should become a full-service gas state. That's a big news out of Springfield today. So coming up a little bit later in the program, the Chicago Accent Challenge. If you have a great Chicago accent, you can actually win prizes. When's that ever been said to you? Before, people were like, where are you from? Now they'd be like, hey, you want to win a prize? I have a couple of questions for you. We'll suss out the best Chicago accent and you win a prize. 312-981-7200. We'll do that in about an hour. But I had mentioned Mary Wisniewski had a really moving piece in the Chicago Tribune last week. It was a commentary to show compassion for the living, go to wakes and funerals. She starts her piece by saying, my parents gave me a lot of good advice. Own, don't rent, always signal a turn, and if you can, go to the wake or funeral. She talks about her personal experience losing her mother and what it meant for people to reach out. And it's very, very touching. She's such a great writer. Mary Wisniewski in the Chicago Tribune. She's a transportation writer, and she does such great work. But she does a great commentary here. But she talks about she says, here's a fact about mourning. When someone close to you dies, even if it's expected, it's like a bomb has gone off. And you and your family are wandering around in the rubble, shivering in the wind. You don't know what day it is, and you keep forgetting why you went into a room. Eyeglasses are lost, appointments forgotten. And you try to deal with the fact that this person who was so essential is somehow incredibly no longer on this earth. And she says, at this time, the visits and the calls from friends are like pieces of a quilt. And the quilt pieces come together in a blanket and they warm you, getting you through this time of shock and sorrow. It doesn't matter at all if you just say, I'm sorry. You don't have to stay long. You don't have to be clever. The thought is really enough. It's enough that they're there in a stuffy funeral parlor at a luncheon or looking at pictures of your mom and nodding as you babble. This is the part that got me and why I want to talk to you about this. She says, fewer people are going to memorial services these days. According to surveys by the National Funeral Directors Association in 2013, 10% of respondents from the surveys said they had not gone to a funeral in the last 5 years. Fast forward to 2019, that number is close to 40%. And the number, that's startling to me. Now, that could be because just happenstance. But I think maybe it has more to do with, the ability for people to reach out, our busy lives, but the ability for you to use social media and other places to reach out and communicate your condolences. And so that you don't necessarily put a premium on having to go to a wake or a funeral because you have reached out and made your thoughts aware. And I don't know. I don't know the answer to it. Because there are a couple of times that people that I've known or family members of people that I've known that there's a wake or funeral and it has 5:30, 6 o'clock at night and I've got to be on the air. How am I going to make that happen? You know what? I'll send them an email. Which is just shameful. I hate it. And there are sometimes I'm not very good in those scenarios. I don't know what it is. I want to be much more. I have this idea in my head about who I am, and I show up, and I can be really stoic and compassionate and warm and loving. And I get there, and I get nervous, and I try to make jokes. I talked about this a little bit, but I went to my friend Leah died in New York a couple of months ago, right before Christmas time. And they lived in New York. She was fighting breast cancer, and her husband Neil and I went to college together, and two great daughters. And we decided to fly out to New York. They live in Staten Island. Fly out and fly back. Now, I got there, and my buddy Neil, you know, I had a long way to get there. Like, it took a long time. And I got there, and I was like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. So I hugged him, and I said, I didn't even say sorry. I just hugged him, you know? And I went and sat down for a couple hours. Didn't know really anybody. Tried my best to talk to certain family members that I did know peripherally. And really never got back around to having any sort of significant moment with my friend Neil. Because he was busy. Because he was the epicenter of the widow, you know? At a certain point, everybody was there to... And it was a very popular... Leah was very popular in New York. She had a lot of friends and people who wanted to... And Neil had a lot of friends, and they surrounded him with love. And Leah's parents and Leah's family. So I felt really awkward about it, but it was the right move to go. But I feel really good about it. But I also remember saying to my wife, I was like, I feel bad that I didn't spend more time with Neil. So the question tonight, are you still going to funerals and wakes? And also, a little bit of a, I don't know, I'd like to know a little bit your thoughts about mourning and grieving and wakes and funerals and the etiquette and everything that goes into it. The calls are jumping the line here, so let's talk about it. Mike, let's start with you, bud. Mike, so what do you think of the wake and the funeral?
Well, traditionally, yeah, wakes and funerals have been part of my life growing up and still to this day. Yeah. I guess this all depends on the family and the family situation. But I see more and more these days people having a celebration of life.
Yeah, right.
Just foregoing the whole funeral aspect and just celebrating the person's life in the way, you know, and most of it is left in, you know, their own will.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know what's great, Mike?
This is what they want.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot of that, you know, about what the experience
is. So, I mean, it's all about your personal choice.
Yeah.
And how you want to be remembered.
All right, I appreciate that, Mike. Thanks for calling. Sorry to cut you off there, buddy. Yeah, I was going to say about the memorial, but that's what they're doing. That's where I'm going in 2 weeks, is going back to do the more memorial as opposed to just the wake and the funeral. Let's go to Sherry. Sherry, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. So, yeah, so tell me about the wake and the funeral experience for you.
Well, I always try to go to at least the wake. Uh-huh. But I could tell you each and every person who showed up to my mom's funeral
really?
The wake.
Really?
Yeah, and it meant the world to me whether I spent 2 minutes with them or half an hour. And even some of my friends actually brought their mothers along.
Even if you didn't have a lot of time with them.
Even if you don't have a lot of time with them, I remember who was there. Hmm. And it always struck me as they were nice enough to come out, whether I spent 2 minutes or 20, to at least pay their respects, to give me a hug, tell me they were sorry, whatever it was. And that meant the world to me. Yeah. So whenever I know somebody has passed, that, you know, a relative or somebody who was close to somebody I was close to, I always go.
Yeah.
And maybe just to the wake, but, you know.
But you go.
Yes.
All right, Sherry, thanks for calling. I appreciate it. That's great. That's wonderful. Sherry remembers everybody's who's at her mom's wake. She probably also remembers who wasn't there. Linda, you're in the funeral business?
Yes, right. I'm in the funeral business, I have a lot of information, but I just want to address something you said mm-hmm. about you didn't know what to do, you felt awkward,
mm-hmm.
right,
mm-hmm.
at your friend. Well,
yep.
So many people will say, well, Harry, I'm so sorry, if you need anything, you know, let me know. No, they're not going to call you. What a good suggestion is go up to them, tell them you're really sorry, especially if you know the deceased.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry about, you know, this. But I'll tell you what, I know you're going to be busy tonight. You'll be in my prayers, and I'm going to call you in a couple of weeks, all right? I want to take you to lunch.
Mm.
Now, you don't have to leave an envelope or send flowers. Give him or her a call in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's great.
Take him to lunch. Give him your time, because they don't have time to spend with you there. And, you know, so that's what I would say.
Yeah, that's great.
And we were told don't say, you know, if you need anything. No, they're not going to say, hello, this is me, I need something.
Right.
It's not going to happen,
right,
you know.
Right.
Just take them to lunch. Put your money there, you know. Spend a few dollars and give them your time.
I love it. Thanks, yeah. Linda. Thanks for the call.
Okay. You're welcome.
Yeah, that's great advice. Wow. That's good. That makes me feel better. That I feel like I've done that. I feel like that's been a part of the experience with my friend Neil, but also just with a lot of the people that I've lost in the last couple of weeks. Debbie.
Hi, Justin.
Hi.
Good to be on the air with you. I read Mary's column.
Wasn't
and
so good?
I pulled it out.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. I pulled it out, cut it out of the newspaper. My husband passed away suddenly almost 3 years ago, and he had worked for American Airlines. And I'll tell you, the people that came to the wake that just said stuff to myself and to my children, I never would have had that. And I was very much like Mary growing up. I was raised Catholic, am Catholic, went to wakes as a kid. It was almost like drilled into us. It's so important to go.
Yeah.
Don't email somebody, or if you have to email somebody, drop a card and just write about that person. If you can't make the wake, go to the funeral the next day. I mean, you don't know what it does for the people, the family that of the person that's died.
Thanks, Debbie. That's great. Sorry for your loss.
You're welcome.
Well.
Have Thank a great you. Night. Yep. Thanks.
All right, let's go to Elizabeth. Elizabeth.
I go to wakes. I don't go to funerals. But for my husband, who was sick from the age of 30 on, we had 3 small children under 5. They didn't know what he had. It took them 2 years to decide that he had an AVM. They didn't know what that was at that time. And they told me he was going to die. And I thought, no, he's not. So I found a doctor that treated it like epilepsy. And I kept him alive until he was 83 years old.
Wow.
I put him out on the driveway. I had care for him 12 hours a day. Everybody in the neighborhood saw him. All of his friends came to talk to him, and they sat on stools and talked to him. And I thought, that was enough for him, you know? And my children were all over the world. I had a daughter who was with the Department of Defense on the Black Sea, and I had another one who was in Hawaii, and I thought, you know, they came and visited, they talked to him, they saw him, so I just had him cremated, and I put him on the low mantle fireplace with a picture, and I have him with me all the time. I'm still taking care of him. But the thing that I save the most, and I still have him and I read them over, are the cards that I got from people. They wrote so many nice things about him. And I look, in fact, I just looked over them about 2 weeks ago.
Wow. Elizabeth, thank you so much for calling. Thanks for sharing that story.
You're welcome. Mm.
That's great. Let's do this. Let's take a break so we can just catch our breath. That was a great story from Elizabeth. All right, we'll come back. Tom, I got you in the line. I got a lot of texts as well. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. Thank you so much for calling in and talking about experiences you've had either personally or going to wakes and funerals. Mary Wisniewski's piece in the Chicago Tribune was really moving about really talking about how important it was for her family and her friends for those who came to the wake and funeral. And she quoted some stats that showed that attendance at wakes and funerals are down. There's a survey done by Funeral Home, National Funeral Home, and says 40% of people say they haven't been to a wake or funeral in the last 5 years. It's hard to believe. Why is that? And how important is it? If you're on the fence like me, who gets anxious, I get anxious around it. I don't know what to say. But I'm hearing great stories from people calling in and texting who are suggesting what to do. Like, I really enjoyed Linda's comment as well, just about, I'm going to call you in a couple of weeks. That's so much better than, let us know if you need anything. Let's go to Tom. Tom, thanks for calling in. What's your thought on wakes and funerals?
My thought is, you got to go.
Yeah.
I lost a son about 9 years ago, and I remember everybody that went to that funeral. Excuse me, but it people who didn't go, like, you don't hold anything against them, but to this day, it's coincidentally tomorrow's his birthday. You remember everybody that came. And the most moving comment was a very good friend who said, "Tom, there's nothing I can say to you," and it's true. But the idea that they show up, it lasts forever. So,
that's great.
If there's question, just go, and you spend 2 minutes, I guarantee whoever was hosting that funeral that wake, they're going to remember your presence forever.
Thanks for calling, Tom. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's hearing these stories. Tom and Elizabeth. And everyone's calling in and texting. I appreciate it. It's hard to talk about that. 312-981-7200. 847 says it's always right to go. Sometimes it's awkward because it's someone's family. They may not know, but I feel like I should still offer my condolences to a friend. You ain't got to stay for a long time. 815 says, I go to the wake to share with the family some incident the deceased shared with me that impacted my life. That's good. 708 says, checking if you grew up on the South Side, which I was lucky enough to do, community is everything, and everyone shows up for each other, wakes, funerals, etc. 312 says, I think when family, close friends, and neighbors are involved, you should attend the wake and funeral or the memorial service. All others, the wake and memorial would be appropriate. If you cannot attend, send a card. Hmm. 312 said, when my mother died quite suddenly, I was inconsolable. Like many other callers, I remember everyone that came through the line at the wake. Some of my best memories from the wake were when people came up to me and said, you don't know me, but your mother had such an impact on my life. That's great. Yeah, we're going to the public memorial coming up here, which will be a different experience, but we're taking my son this time. Like when we went out for the wake, which was, you know, we really wanted to be out there for my friend Neil and his family, of course. And we know them really well. They live in New York. But we did it right before Christmas, and my son Miles couldn't come with, and he knows the daughters well. And so we're going out for a public, the kind of thing we were talking about with Mike right at the beginning of this segment. We're going out there for the memorial that they put together. They're doing a big performance and this whole thing in Staten Island coming up in a couple weeks. So that'd be great. All right, let's go back to the phones. Penny. Penny, tell us, you're a retired nurse?
Yes, I am. And I hope maybe this eases your anxiety a little bit. When I was in nursing school, I wanted to say something to the family of a patient that I took care of. Mm-hmm. And I said to my instructor, I'm sorry.
Okay.
This is not going to be easy. And she said, it's not supposed to be.
Right. Isn't that the truth, Penny?
So I hope that helps you.
It does. Thank you for that call. Thank you for being brave and telling that story, too. To everybody who called tonight. I thought Mary's piece was great. I mean, so many people want to talk about this. And I know that so many people had posted it in my circles to Facebook. It's this piece about how important it is to go to the wake and the funeral. As much as our lives are busy and it's harder and harder to get here to there to wherever and how to be, you know, these things are important. Just for the impact it has on people who are living and mourning and grieving well after the fact. 312-981-7200. 773 says, please go to the wake. the funeral, share a story about the person. When my dad died, I heard so many stories about my dad from people I didn't know. I saw my dad through others' eyes, and I learned about him in a way I never could. I'm so grateful for all those people and those stories they shared. I'm so proud to hear how people admired him and held him up as a model to emulate. That meant the most to me. Great conversation. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break here. We'll come back. If you guys want to continue to talk about it, I'm more than happy to take your calls and text. I think it's great to hear your stories and to share in what it meant for you to have people at Pacific Wakes and Funerals. 312-981-7200. We'll come back in just a second. Stay with us. Let's go back to the phones. 312-981-7200. Let's talk to Fran. Fran, thanks for calling in. You've got a story about a funeral?
My mom and my Auntie Marie both had the same first and last name. So we're always, my mom would always read the obituaries to see if you knew anybody that passed away, and then you'd go and you'd pay your respects. So when my Auntie Marie passed away, a woman my mom worked with came to the funeral, I mean, not the funeral, to the wake, walked up, paid her respects, told my cousins how sorry she was the mother died, and said, their daughters, let's get out of here, this is the wrong Marie. So she's coming back down, and there's my mom going, hi, thank you for coming. And it was a good laugh, but also made my mom feel good that this woman took enough time to come to pay her respects.
Yeah.
And when my mom did pass away, she came again.
Wow, that's a great story.
We appreciated it.
That's great, Fran. Thanks for sharing that. That's great. That's a wonderful story. 312-981-7200. Wow, what an emotional night. I'd have to say, I saw Mary Wisniewski. This all came from Mary Wisniewski's column that was in the Tribune about her mother had died not too long ago, and she had written a piece about, you know, this alarming stat that had come from a survey that said that something like 40% of people who were surveyed hadn't gone to a funeral or a wake in the past 5 years. And whether or not the trend of going to support loved ones or friends or coworkers, whatever it might be, when they lose somebody or they themselves perish, that people aren't going. They're finding different ways to show their emotion. But to read the stories and hear the emotional stories of people calling in, it tells you how important the wakes and the funerals are. 312-981-7200. 847 says, my husband died 5+ years ago. Just saying something that shows your appreciation to the person that passed, a personal story or remembrance, it means a lot. 630 says, learned in hospice volunteer training. No one is comfortable attending a wake or funeral. Learn to be comfortable feeling uncomfortable. The bereaved will most likely not remember anything you said, but they'll remember you were there. That's great. 312-981-7200. Hi, Justin. This is such a moving, difficult topic. I lost my husband to cancer in 2013 at the age of 61. I remember all those who came through. They were grieving, too, so we were able to comfort each other. In terms of keeping in touch, after a year had passed, a dear friend asked me how I was doing. I always lied when I got that question and said, I'm fine. She said, no, I want to know how you really are. And that touched me more than anyone could know, because she truly cared. Any gesture, whether a visit, card, phone call, or dinner out, will be appreciated. Thanks, Sue, for that call, that text, that memory. Good stuff, everybody. I don't know if we're going to get to everybody here, so there's a lot of texts that are calling in, so I'll get to one more that says, just really it's just more about etiquette, you know, as people are texting and they're telling you they're for the living. 217 says, wakes and funerals are for the living, to share another's grief and your own. A wake is usually less somber, a funeral more bleak, with get-together afterwards for folks who come in from out of town. Go to the wake if you can. The funeral's not always necessary. 773 says, I feel like it's not... Let's see where that go. Just lost it. Not about which one is more appropriate to go to, but that at least you attend either the wake or the funeral out of respect. The family understands that not everyone can do both or stay long or either. but it'll mean a lot to them if you came. 630 says, wake or funeral depends on how well you know and are close to the family. One, the wake, support the family, pay respects. Two, the funeral, if you knew them well. Both, if you are related or had a long-time close relationship. 708 says, listening from Florida, my mom's funeral was over 20 years ago. And the one thing I remember about her wake was that I never realized how many friends she had until she died. And 773 says, no need to be profound. Unlikely your words will be remembered. Your presence will be. A hug and I don't know what to say is fine. 815 says, when my dad died, we put things out in the reception area. The things were a great way to break the uneasy silence and have the friends share stories about my dad. Yeah. That's great. All right. I guess that I'm trying to think of the transition because I got a couple of things we want to talk about tonight. I'm trying to find a good transition as we go from death to life. We could talk about love. We could talk about Valentine's Day and how much money people are choosing to spend on Valentine's Day. I want to talk about this. I teased it out at the top. I'd love to talk about the Houston Astros cheating scandal. We can get into that. We got the Chicago Accent Challenge coming up. And also, there's another story, too, if we get to it. If not, we'll get to it tomorrow or Wednesday. Is about the hamburgers. There was a story today in the Daily Mail showcasing the 50 top most expensive hamburgers. The number one hamburger was like $150. But what I've noticed is that restaurants, fine dining or otherwise, then the price of a hamburger continues to go up. I remember now. I always know what the price of the hamburger is in a fancy restaurant because it's always what I order to be like, yeah, I'll just have the burger because I don't want to spend $35 on anything else. So I get the $17 burger. I'll just have a burger. I really like the burger. But really, it's just a cost cutting measure as I'm doing that math in my head. Everyone's, oh, she's 15, 18, 33. That cocktail was 15, 27, 90, 91, 106. Oh, yeah. Oh, plus the 20%. No. I'll have the burger. But more often than not, I think restaurants, especially the high dining kind, they're catching up. The price of the hamburger continues to go up. Now I see them all in 20s. $20 for a hamburger. We can talk about that. But let's talk about this Valentine's Day story. Why don't we do that? From death to love, huh? It might be a good transition. So I heard a little bit about this Kim Gordon's newscast today just about consumer spending. There's a survey that comes out every year about Valentine's Day consumer spending, and we've heard a lot about this. But last year was a record. Get this. It was $161 per person. That was what people spent in the survey. $161 per person. This year, this is unbelievable to me. This year, they're expecting to shatter the previous record of $161 and spend an average on $196. Now, I need some help because I think I might be walking into a trap. I have been one in the past that has spent $190. I'll be the first to say went overboard, especially if I'm buying for both my wife and my son. I grew up in a household, by the way, where it was a card and a Kit Kat. Classic. Oh, what's this? Oh, it's Valentine's Day. A Kit Kat. Yay! That was great by me. But I married into a relationship that Valentine's Day meant much more. That meant you got to go to a fancy restaurant, and then you got to get some sort of chocolate thing or gift, whatever it might be. All told, when you count the restaurant and everything else, way too much money. Then got a kid, and then it becomes like, oh, well, this, do you get him a Lego set for Valentine's Day? It seems weird. So yesterday, when I'm walking into Target behind my family, as I'm dragging, because I'm like, why am I carrying the kitty litter? You know, it's like, ugh. My wife stops on a dime, and she says, hey, let's make a pact. No gifts for Valentine's Day this year. Let's just do a card and a candy bar. all in, like in the store. And I'm like, yeah, like over, way too overzealous. I mean, I've got both my hands in. Yes. And break. But I kind of feel like I'm getting set up. Like, I feel like that's going to happen, but I'm going to get that one little moment where she's like, this is all I got? Or something like that that's going to just wreck me emotionally. So $196, and they say it's really being pushed by the millennial crowd. They're the ones that the millennial generation loves gift giving for Valentine's Day. That's the idea. They're really the ones that are jacking up the price. I was reading the story in Fox about millennials are the ones that overspend compared to Gen X and baby boomers. They say that millennials are going to be spending almost $40, $50 more than everybody else. Now, I'm in a position where I might get lucky here where I'm spending, what, $6 on a card? And what's a Kit Kat go for these days? 35 cents? Oh, $3.50? Cool. All candy bars are 35 cents. But are you planning? Are you honestly planning? I guess I have to ask this question. What do you do for Valentine's Day? Are you a gift giver? Are you the kind of person who is going to spend a ton of money on Valentine's Day? You got the relationship set up where both of you are going to give a ton of gifts. Maybe not a ton, but there's going to be some quality to it. Like the one year that I brought home the One Direction heart of candy from the Walgreens as a joke, did not go over well because my wife believes that Valentine's Day is like second on the calendar of the holidays. So 312-981-7200. 847 says, a Lou Malnati's heart pizza and a Kit Kat heart-shaped candy box. Easy peasy. So you go for the heart stuff. I like that. 773 says, my mom loved Valentine's Day. I was born 9 months later, 71 years ago. Well, 312-981-7200. Are you going to spend a ton of money? 412 says, no, you just save the cardboard heart box that you get and just fill it with Kit Kats later. Like every year, just recycle the box. Hey, you're environmentally conscious. But yeah, I don't know what to do. I feel like today I went out and got the card. I'm all set. When I was at the Jewel, the self-checkout, I had such a problem with that. The self-checkout at Jewel has become the bane of my existence. I don't know if it's the one by me or what the deal is, because Mary, who calls in all the time, texts in all the time, she's queen of the self-checkout. She can nail it. She knows how to do it. I'm assuming she's at a Jewel or Mariano's or some Whole Foods. But, I don't know why, but this thing just keeps talking back to me. So I got the card for my wife. You know, you scan it. And then it's light as a feather. So for the next 2 minutes, which feels like 10 minutes, but it's probably 15 seconds, the machine is yelling at me saying, put the item in the bag. Put the item in the bag. Put the item in the bag. Hey, put the item in the bag. And I honestly almost punched the machine because I wasn't going to put it in the bag because first off, I don't want to bend it, get it all messed up next to the bananas I'm buying. When it's, you know, kind of be somewhat nice. Put it in the jacket pocket. That's a different segment. That's next week when we talk about self-checkouts. 708 says, Justin, the card is everything. Not a joke card. Ah, darn it. I already bought the card and it was a joke card. I'm worried I'm walking into a trap. That's my biggest worry. You got to help me, guys. 312-981-7200. I survive Valentine's Day, and this is the worst, but I survive Valentine's Day. I'm not romantic-y. Like, it's not really in my blood. Like, it's not something that I'm going out of my way to create some sort of gesture of love through this Hallmark holiday. But I survive usually because I wait till the last minute and then I go, I got to get something. And then I overspend. And she's like, you didn't have to do this. I'm like, I did because I love you. So, you know, here you go. But I'm like, really, I did it because I'm just embarrassed I didn't think about it faster, or that I know that my approach to Valentine's Day is inferior, if that makes sense. Let's go to Katrina. Katrina, you going to help me out?
Yeah, okay. So my thing is, okay, nothing wrong with, like, Valentine's Day or giving, you know, giving gifts for Valentine's Day, giving gifts for Christmas or someone's birthday, whatever. They're cool, great. But why, no, but for real, why are you doing it, though? Is it because, like, oh, it's Valentine's Day, so, you know, like, you know, for me, if I was married, oh, it's Valentine's Day, so I have to get my husband something, or, you know, oh, you know, if it's, you know, my husband, well, I'm not married, but just saying, oh, my, you know, oh, I got to get something for my wife. No, you don't.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you can do that any day. You that, know, it's more,
true, but you're
really.
Okay, so my wife is extremely into Valentine's Day. So this is, so it's not the kind of thing where I could let Valentine's Day go by for 3 weeks, not get her anything on the 14th, and then in March be like, hey, I was feeling it today. Here's a card. Like, it's like Christmas, I mean, or Halloween, or any of the holidays where it's the day, and if you don't do it on a day, you have failed.
But what's more important, though, like the quality time that you spend with somebody, or material things that in the end,
yeah,
don't really.
Katrina, I'm going to bring you with on Valentine's Day. Really, Katrina's got some really good points. See how that goes over. Thanks for calling. But Katrina said, she said it's about the quality time, babe. It's not about the Vosges chocolate. It's really about me. Like, I have to say, it's more about me and my anxiety around the holiday. I feel my wife is, I don't want to make it out to be she's some sort of tyrant when it comes to Valentine's. It's just, I work it up, and then the same thing, like I said, it's the day before, and I'm like, oh, I had a plan. I didn't do that plan. All right, you know what? I'll be an idiot and drop more money than I should on some gift so it looks like I thought about it, right? Because if you go, the old Saturday Night Live sketch, which is great, where they make fun of the fact that guys go to the Walgreens and get the little teddy bear, little $3 teddy bear for Valentine's Day. They're like, show her she cares, or show you care by buying the Walgreens, the thing next to the register at Walgreens. All right, 312-981-7200. I got a ton of texts that are on this issue, so I've hit a nerve. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. Stay with us. Talking about Valentine's Day, the survey that came out saying that this year should shatter all records. Maybe that's a sign of the economy. But last year, they set a record for, I think it was $160 spent on loved ones for Valentine's Day. I think it's one person. This year, the expectation, it's going to be 196. I don't know how they know that yet. Maybe in the next week, you never know, a bunch of guys will be like, oh, I'm going to downsize. I'm going to go a little bit lighter. But they're projecting $196. And I feel like I might be running into a trap, because at a certain point, I too have spent that kind of money. I wouldn't say $196. But this weekend, my wife said, why don't we just get cards and a candy bar? Does that work for everybody? Like almost like a family pact. And I was like, yeah, simply the best. And now I'm like, wait a second. Am I setting myself up to be given that one look? Oh, this is it? That makes me feel awful, like I ruined Valentine's Day. 312-981-7200. 412 says you can buy a Hallmark card at Dollar General for a dollar. Well, yeah. The love is just exuding off the screen, 412. 708, Valentine's Day should be every day through the year, not just one day. Treat each other right all year long. Huh. That's nice. It's a nice sentiment. I'll remember that in June. 843 says, it's the opening day of college baseball. Huh. My wife and I are going the day after. It's too expensive on Valentine's Day. That's nice, but you have already made that, you worked together on that, right? I'm assuming. 815 says, how about a candle and a rose? There are many beautifully scented candles, or take a memorable photo and put it in a nice frame can be pulled out every year. That's good. I like that. 815, strong. 708 says, cards are bought at the dollar store. She said a card and a candy bar, but go to the Jewels for flowers Thursday night. They sell flowers at 2 to 3 times their normal price, but it's a good idea. Yeah, that might be good. There's a place next door to our house that I always go for Valentine's Day. And I got to be honest, I do this trick. It's a trick. Don't give this away, okay? But the trick is, I don't like going into the florists and having to choose which flowers to get for my wife. Because I feel, then I'm on the hook. Come back and she goes, oh, I don't like these flowers. Or I don't like this kind of flower. And I'm always like, ugh. So I bring my son, I've done it for the last couple of years. And I go in and I go, oh, hi. And they come over to greet and they go, what kind of flowers? I'm like, well, Miles, what flowers do you think mom wants? And then they work together as a present for mom. And I'm off the hook. So when the flowers go in and she goes, oh, these are so beautiful. I'm like, yeah, Miles picked them out. Before you say anything, Miles picked them out. 312 says, Valentine's is a day to show appreciation to your significant other in whatever way that would be special for the both of you. That's a great sentiment. 708 says, make words your gift. Tell your sweetheart the top three reasons you love them. I like that. Doc's on the line. Hey, Doc.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going
good. Does your wife work?
Yeah.
Okay. Valentine is a lot about competing with everybody else. And even if Valentine's Day were on Saturday or Sunday this week, you have to have flowers at the office on Friday,
right?
Because everybody's going to get them.
Right.
Now, what my brother and I have done for 20 years, we have a list of probably 40 cities around the United States that have romantic-sounding names. And if you were to look up online under Valentine's Remailing, and you send your Valentine to that city, attention postmaster, on the outside you put postmaster Valentine's Remailing, they open it up, they have special cancellations this time of year, and they would mail them back. And these would be cities like Valentine, Nebraska, Valentine, Arizona, oh. Valentine, Texas. Like in the case of Loveland, Colorado, they do a new four-line poem every year. They make new stamps. They get like a bunch of senior citizens to come in and hand cancel an extra 300,000 pieces of mail every year.
What a great store. I didn't know this.
I was written up in the Kansas City Star front page above the fold on Valentine's Day about 5 years ago that said stamps are postmarks are his special stamp of love.
That's amazing.
But
that's so
as
cool.
Your, yeah. As everybody's getting flowers, you know, on about Wednesday this week, your wife would get 3 or 4. Thursday she'd get another 4 or 5. And people are just crowding around to see what she's getting it every day. And they all, like I said, they have special postmarks. We, you know, there's Romeo, Michigan, Julia, Georgia.
So where do we find the info where it's collected? You collected it somewhere? Like a website?
If you were to look up Valentine's Remailing,
Valentine's,
you would get
Remailing.
That list.
All right, great.
Now, your wife might have a special name. My wife's name is Dawn. There's two Dawns in the United States, Dawn, Missouri, and Dawn, Texas.
Oh, that's great.
And then we usually sneak one in from Intercourse, Pennsylvania, too, just to keep it clear.
Thanks, Doc. That's a great idea. Wow. There you go. That's great, useful information for everybody. 312-981-7200. We'll keep it going. I've got a ton more texts. Doc, that was amazing. I've got a good 15, 20 more texts to get through and ideas for Valentine's Day if you want to get in on this conversation. 312-981-7200. We've got the Chicago Accent Challenge coming up, but right now we are stuck on Valentine's Day, and we'll stay there, so stay with us. 312-981-7200, getting some great texts and calls on Valentine's Day. The Doc idea was great, so to be able to remail out and have it come back to you with special stamps and love notes, that's a great idea. What an innovative idea. We're talking about Valentine's Day and how much we should spend, but also idea of gifts that are important for this loved one holiday. We'll continue that conversation. We've got Becky on the line. I got some others as well that are texting in. 312-981-7200. Vic Vaughn's News. Then we'll continue the conversations here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Our phone number tonight, if you missed it, we talked about the importance of going to wakes and funerals. Really, really great phone calls and texts in that segment. Before that, we talked about the issues that would bring you to the polls this year. And before that, we asked whether or not you'd support Illinois becoming a full-service gas station state. The bill was introduced in Springfield. But right now, we're talking about Valentine's Day. A study says that this year's spending will break the record and that it's being driven by younger generations. Millennials are poised to spend $200 per person on Valentine's Day. 312-981-7200. Becky, what about you? Are you a Valentine's Day fan?
I am, but maybe I've been married too long. It's been I've been married 32 years, and I have to tell you, do some vacuuming and get me a pizza, and I am good for Valentine's Day.
I love it. That's great. Yeah. I'm going to try that. Thanks, Becky.
Thanks. Bye.
There you go. I'd gladly do that. The subplot on this segment, of course, is that my wife yesterday, she stopped us. We were walking in Target. I think maybe she was inspired by the Valentine's Day kiosks that they set up. It's not even a stand anymore. It's the half of the store, right? Although they probably moved on to Easter by now. But the concept of she stopped and she said, listen, hey, packed, family packed. Let's not do more than a card and a candy bar this year. Hands in, all in. I may have been overzealous in my excitement, my exuberance for that moment. It's like, yes! Because I grew up with that, just a card and a candy bar. My wife has always been much more in on Valentine's Day. So I feel like I'm walking into a trap. But she said it. All right, let's get back into some of these texts. There's a great text. 773 says, Larry David, for example, would agree not to exchange gifts, but he'd be the only one that actually followed through. He'd be right, yet he'd be wrong. 312 says, Valentine's Day is not about the gift. It's about showing appreciation. 412 says, go to the early bird crowd on Valentine's Day. Sneak in with the seniors. Order some liver and onions. Okay. That sounds very Valentine-y. 630 says, 630 sent a photo of the, looks like a self-taken photo in front of the card display at the local Walgreens saying, I took this at 5 p.m. on Valentine's Day last year, and it's just a bunch of dudes standing in front of the card shop. Sure. Jerry says, doesn't your wife listen to you on the radio? Jerry, come on. Of course she doesn't. It's 10 o'clock. She's got other things to do. She's got to watch Goop on Netflix. Although, my mother-in-law does. Maybe she'll relay the information. Although it's getting late. It's after 10 o'clock. 815 says it's all relative. You make $15 an hour and you pick out a personalized gift for $50. Or you make $50 an hour and you give a generic $3 card with a $20 in it. Lots of ways to go. I don't know if I'm a big fan of the cash in Valentine's, but that does give me an idea. Maybe that's what I need to do. Maybe a candy bar and some cash. Put a crisp 10 in there. And that could work. 815 says, 847 says, a simple silver bracelet, sterling silver, doesn't have to be really expensive, and she'll think of you whenever she wears it. That's a thought. Thank you for that. That's very thoughtful, 847. Aaron says, is your wife a huge Valentine's fan? Then she tricked you. You better do a little something for her. A heart-shaped pizza is even fun for your son as well. That would be good. I'm going to be on the, we're on the air Friday night for Valentine's Day. While you're all out, all your listeners are out whining and dining, Pete and I will be here showing love for ourselves as we talk about the topics of the day. Yeah. 708 says, I recommend the book Love Languages and make every day Valentine's Day. 815 says, my husband thought Valentine's Day was a ripoff, but I got flowers throughout the year just because. That's a nice gesture. 312-981-7200. 224 says, you're the new Milt. Yeah, I don't know how many Milt Rosenberg segments were all about what he should get his wife for Valentine's Day, but I'll take it for sure. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We'll talk about Valentine's Day a little bit later in the week as well. We have a couple other thoughts about the holiday. I want to get to this before we... we'll see if we'll get to the accent challenge tonight, because I want to talk about this Houston Astros cheating scandal. I know you guys have thoughts on this. So we all know the scandal by now. If you're a baseball fan or not a baseball fan, you know that the Houston Astros were accused, and there is evidence, and they have been punished for it after an investigation of stealing signs. What that is, they use technology. You're not supposed to do that in baseball. You can, if you're a runner on base or you're a coach and you pick up the tendencies of the catcher, you can steal signs. But you can't use the video room and the high-tech technology to steal. And in some cases, the Houston Astros were being accused of actually wearing buzzers on their bodies. And someone from the dugout would buzz, 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 buzz when they knew what the pitch was. Bzz. But the rudimentary way they were doing it is they would smash a trash can. If it was a fastball, they'd hit it once and you'd hear the bang in the stadium. Bang, bang, if it was a curveball. And the Houston Astros in 2017 ended up winning the World Series. And the internet has gone back and they've mapped all these games. They have shown when the Astros, when they heard the bang, and they've seen how the game was corrupted. So all through it, you could talk about it. We talked about it last week about whether or not Pete Rose should be reinstated because they kind of went easy on the Houston Astros. This just in. What we have is our first lawsuit against Major League Baseball and the Houston Astros. Okay, what would be the lawsuit? That's a good question, because when I heard this, I was like, well, what is the lawsuit? So this is, I guess, works. It's a relief pitcher, okay? Actually, a minor league lifer. His name was Mike Bolsinger, and he was a pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays. And in 2017, he finally got his shot to play in the major leagues. Now you think about that, how important your whole life you spent through high school baseball, peewee, VFW, college, minor league system, finally gets a shot. You know, they do the call-ups for the September call-ups, and he's going to get his shot to pitch in the major leagues. He is pitching on the road against the vaunted Houston Astros in 2017. He gets in the game, and unfortunately, as he gets excited to pitch, he lasts a third of an inning. It means he got one out, but he gave up four runs and was yanked from the ballgame. Toronto Blue Jays manager comes out. We need a left-hander. His major league debut, he doesn't even get out of the first inning. Right after the game, I don't know what the time frame is, you're out. Back to the minors, kid. Goes back to the minor leagues. Never gets a chance again in Major League Baseball. Next year, he doesn't make. He's a minor leaguer. He sticks around long enough. Career over. He had his shot. The Toronto Blue Jays are like, you came up for one inning. You sucked. You're out. Well, it turns out, after all the internet sleuthing, that day that Mike Bolsinger took the mound was one of the biggest days for the trash can sounds and the sign stealing of the Houston Astros. It was played in Houston, and while Bolsinger was on the mound in the first inning, the Astros were stealing his signs. They were smashing the trash can for fastball, twice for curveball. They were doing it. This great graph showed it online where they had almost a line graph that showed what days how many times you heard that sound. And the game that Mike Bolsinger pitched was one of the highest, 17, 20 times or something. He didn't make it out of the first inning because the Astros were cheating. His whole career was harpooned, was torpedoed. Today, Mike Bolsinger filed a lawsuit against the Houston Astros in the Los Angeles Superior Court, accusing the franchise of unfair business practices and negligence. He's seeking unspecified damages. He wants the Astros, not just for his own benefit, this is what he says, Bolsinger wants the Astros to forfeit $31 million in bonuses they received from winning the World Series in 2017. And he wants that money donated to the Los Angeles-based Charities for Children and use a fund, create a fund for retired baseball players who need financial assistance. Now, what do you think? Does he have a case? 312-981-7200. I wonder. We'll take a break. I want to know what you think. Does he have a, does a player who pitched against a team that was cheating, do they have their day in court? Is this going to be the way that the Houston Astros are punished? Will a judge say, yeah, Mike Bolsinger would have had a career. He would have made millions of dollars if you didn't cheat him out in the first inning. I'm fascinated. What do you say about that? 312-981-7200. We'll take a break. Come back. Take your calls and texts. Stay with us. 312-981-7200. We're talking about baseball tonight. More about the lawsuit that was brought to the Los Angeles courts by Mike Bolsinger, who's a former L.A. Dodger and a former Toronto Blue Jays. In a game in August of 2017, he pitched. He got a chance to start, and he pitched against the Astros in Houston. He got shellacked in the first inning, taken out of the game. He never came back up. That was it. They said, you don't have the talent. But then it breaks that the Houston Astros were cheating and stealing his signs, as evidenced by some of the great journalism and internet sleuthing that's happened from. They ranked how many times the garbage can was hit by the bat to say strike or curveball or whatever it was. And in that game that Bolsinger pitched in August, they were doing it constantly. So he has sued for unspecified damages. He says he wants $31 million, which is the exact amount of money that the Astros got in bonus for winning the World Series, and he wants it donated to charity. Does he have a point? We got any lawyers on the? Where's Rich Lenkoff? Could he actually win a lawsuit? I don't know. 419 says, hang the cheaters. I hope he wins and he gets millions. Yeah. 312 says, I agree with the lawsuit simply because he's donating the money to a charity. I do have to ask, if he was that great of a pitcher, why couldn't he have worked his way back from the minors to the majors? Well, that might be a big... I can't wait for that lawsuit. That doesn't get settled. So how would you rank your curveball? He wasn't a really good pitcher. Be a lot of that. 773 says, so you think all of Major League Baseball knew about this cheating? Possibly. Astros players get traded. Do you think they ran into their new team and tell them so? Yeah. So MLB owes all of the ticket buyers for this fraud. That is such a great point. I never thought about that, 773. The Dallas Keuchels and the Mike Fiers who blew the whistle and other Astros players. Regardless of telling the public, did Mike Fiers go pitch for the A's? He goes, whoa, when we go to Houston, they got a whole scam. Right? Did Dallas Keuchel go pitch for the Braves? He's like, yo, if we go back, they're hitting the trash can. And when you hear that, change it up. And if that's the case, isn't that essentially, wouldn't you put that under collusion? If the Braves organization knew what the Astros was doing and didn't say anything but protected themselves? If the Oakland A's were like, we're not going to let the Astros know, we're going to go in there? They only cared about their specific moment. Or could it also be possible that one of these teams went to Major League Baseball and said, you know what our guy told us? And Major League Baseball is like, just mind your own business. So you're absolutely right. Baseball's a fraternity. I find it a little bit hard to believe that everyone was just like, no, I had no idea. Oh, how dare you, clutching their pearls. Oh, how dare you in baseball. I wonder, I don't know how much, we've seen a little bit with O.J. Simpson, and we saw it with other cases where there seems to be these spite rulings after the fact, so O.J. doesn't get convicted on murders, but the next time he's in a courtroom, they're like, you know, I know this is supposed to be a 5-year sentence, but I'm going to give you 50, just so we can call it even. Can they do that with bait, like a lawsuit? Could they say, you know, usually you wouldn't win this, but I think you should because there wasn't enough punishment, and we know this is a bigger story, so you know what? Coincidentally, $31 million. And have the courts strip them of their bonus? I don't know. I like it. 773, you've opened my eyes. I will take it. I'm still getting a lot of texts about Valentine's Day. 708 says, if you don't buy her a Valentine's Day flower on Valentine's Day, you'll be buying her I'm sorry flowers the day after. No, I'll do flowers. That's a good idea. I love it. There's also, I want to read this. This is a text from the wakes and memorials and the talking about wakes and funerals. 773 says, personal suggestion for Justin. If you have a nice photo from the past with Neil and Leah, and if it's great, if it includes you and your wife as well, put it in a beautiful frame, wrap it as a gift, and give it to Neil after the memorial. He'll go home and have wonderful memories whenever he sees the photo. He'll also know how you care and what a special friend you are. That's a really great idea. It's funny because we went through our photos, because we've been long friends, just to back up, you know, for people who didn't listen this hour. My friend Leah, I talked about my friend Leah. She passed away right before Christmas, and that's why I'm going out to a memorial next week in Staten Island, and I went to college with Neil, and we, our families are friends and all that. And, but this for Leah, and it was all about the wake and the funeral and when I went out right before Christmas. Anyway, when we went through the photos to find any photos like that, we were looking through all of them, and we kind of found a couple, blah, blah, blah. And then Julie went back in, which was really weird. She went back in the next day, and she opened up the photos again, like from the, you know, the bin that they're in. And she grabbed the photos, and on the top, the number one photo on the top was when we all went to Wrigley Field when we were like 20-something years old. Like, so, I mean, she couldn't believe that she missed it. Like, we both were like, that's amazing. That's a sign that Leah put it there for us to find. But it's all of us, all of our friends, and the seats are terrible. So you're just like, oh, who sits there? That was my first time. I looked at it, I'm like, oh, God. No clout? We're sitting against the fence in the upper deck here? But yeah, that's a great point, 773. I think I might do that. That would be a great frame to frame that. 312-981-7200. We'll take a break, and we'll come back here on 720 WGN. All right, 312-981-7200. Aaron says, do an edible arrangement, fruit flower arrangement. You ever do one of those? Feel like that's a lot of work. I don't have to do it myself, right? I just buy it from someplace. I always wonder about that, but that's always and fun as well for my son, as points out. Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm not sure. I feel like if you go into the edible arrangements, then you're taking a chance. Then you just got to go back to square one. It's like, why didn't you just get flowers? It's like, all right, 312-981-7200. All right. So earlier in the night, I talked about the upscale burgers. This is, I talked at the beginning of the show about the story that was in the Daily Mail, which is partnering with the Chicago Tribune about the most expensive burgers in America. And most of the burgers, you can see this place, are out in New York City and other places. There's one, I think, that's in Chicago. And they're essentially $30 and up. The top ones get a little bit egregious where it's like $100, $150. I think one's like $1,000. You're like, no, that's like when you're, are you really going to go to the diner and eat the kitchen sink ice cream thing and try to win a t-shirt? Same idea there. I'm not ordering a $1,000 burger. Nobody orders a $1,000 burger. But would you pay $30 for a burger? Restaurants are charging more and more for the American staple. What's your breaking point when it comes to hamburger and fries? Because we've seen in the last couple of years an explosion of bringing hamburgers and cheeseburgers to fine dining, to all the restaurants. It's this sort of pub fare, right? The Au Cheval burger at Randolph and Halsted that tops all the lists around the country. You want to put an egg on that? Sure. You want to put some bacon on that? Sure. It's going to cost you $17. And you go to more and more, and this article was all about how restaurants seem to be supersizing burgers, putting foie gras and other elegant items on top of the burger to increase its value. Now, it's an amazing burger. I mean, you're going to eat this, and you're going to be like, this is like a steak. It's like a meal. But it's usually out of the price point for what hamburgers go for. So I guess the question, and I remember having this conversation not too long ago, a couple years ago, but what's your threshold for a burger? And most people said, I'm not going to go above $10. But the world's moved on. It's 2020. I find myself all the time at a expensive restaurant. Whenever I'm at an expensive restaurant, I will look at the burger as my lifeline. And I'm not much of a meat eater. But when I see go to one of those places, I'll be like, okay, so do I want the chicken? Chicken's $30. I want the crab. Oh my gosh, $45. You know, I want the steak? No, come on, give me a break. I'm not paying $50. Oh, the burger's $17. And I go, you know what? I'm in the mood for a burger when I haven't had a burger in months. I think I'll have the burger. And it's really just to justify the expense at the restaurant. It's always the lowest thing. And I think restaurants are getting it. I think that's what's happening, is restaurants are adding certain things to the burger to make it more expensive because they know us cheap dudes, I'll just have the burger, are trying to get the cheapest thing on the menu. So what's the threshold? Are you paying $20? Are you going to go into a restaurant and pay $20 for a burger? Would you do that? Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying it's the same burger you're getting at the diner that you're picking up for lunch. I'm saying, do you believe in the art of the hamburger? Do you feel that there are some hamburgers that are worth $20? That's the question. 312-981-7200. I would say yes. I know. Once again, Mr. Fancy Justin. But I would say $20 for a burger, yes. Because you know what? It's not a cheap, it's good meat. It's usually done well. It's probably, you know, it's not just a slapped on a bun when you don't shake the Heinz against a table and put a bunch of ketchup and mustard on it. They've prepared it for you to eat. If you look at the photos in this Daily Meal piece that's on the Tribune today, it is these are your high-end burgers. 773 says, this is exactly why I don't go to expensive restaurants. I get it. But I also feel like a hamburger, this is such a sensitive topic. Because I think a lot of people listening automatically are like, there's a category for how much you will pay for certain foods, right? This goes with pasta. This goes with, fat things you can get at fast food that you can get at expensive restaurants, right? Hamburgers fall into that category. And we've had such a great relationship, if you will, with hamburgers over time in this country, whether it's McDonald's or high-end places like Sonic or Shake Shack that are going to be a little bit more fancy burgers, right? But fast food has created a price point for hamburgers. And then you'll have the pub burger. I just had a great one over at Marge's in Old Town. We went to the trivia. I had the trivia pub crawl this weekend, which was a lot of fun. Although there were some things that weren't trivia. I don't want to get into a side here. Kathy, my wife's friend, she puts on this pub crawl trivia. It's great. It's so creative. It's so innovative. And something you should be doing 10, 15 years. So many people come out to it. And you do trivia. And you essentially hop from bar to bar. And I was all psyched. I was ready. I was sharp. My brain sharp, right? And then the second or third one was, put this blindfold on and it's a taste test. Because it was a food and drink themed. So I had to like take a spoon into like herbs. You know, and then like smell it and taste it. That's not trivia, right? You didn't say there was a physical challenge to this. One, we had to take chopsticks and in a timed moment pick up M&Ms or marshmallows or gummy bears or whatever they put in from a bowl to a bowl. It's great. We had a lot of fun doing it, but I'm like, I don't know if it's trivia. You know, I'm ready to answer some questions about food and drink. We came in third, by the way. But back to the hamburger. I feel that they've changed by bringing burgers to expensive restaurants. It's just an evolution. $5 for a burger at the fast food, $10 for a pub burger, right? $15 to $20 for an expensive restaurant. 708 says, nice restaurant, burger threshold, $15. All right, I like that. Burger and fries and drink, $20. Yeah, I would take that. But see, this is where I think they get you. They're making that $22. They're making that $24. Now you're seeing the threshold used to be $15, now it's $17. There's just one extra. It's only $2 more. That's the move. That's what I see is happening. 312-981-7200. The place I work puts mushrooms on morels on one of the burgers, raising the price from 11 to 17. See? That's what I'm talking about. 815 coming through. Yep, you put a couple more exotic ingredients on a burger, you jack that up. I agree. 630 says the RPM burger, it's the best. It's worth every penny. How much is it? You got to tell me how much it is. Right? I'm okay with it. I don't have a problem. Like I said, most of the time it's your lifeline. You're in an expensive restaurant. You're there for some occasion. Everybody's looking at the Vesuvio. Possibly some, I think it'd be the muscles. You know, and you're just like sweating as you're looking, knowing you're going to have to pay at the end. Oh, maybe we'll get an appetizer? And I'm like, I'll have the burger. Even though it's an expensive burger, I'm like, $19 is better than $32. Or if my wife ever says, you want to split the burger? I'm like, yes. We'll do the pasta and the burger? Yes. Split it. I'll eat it. Take everything off the burger. This is what 708 says. Remove the bun. Substitute mashed potatoes for the fries. Add peas. And call it Salisbury steak for $20. They would put... There's going to be a moment, 708, where... Just think about this. There's going to be a moment soon in culinary circles where Salisbury steak will make a comeback. And it'll be just like the TV dinner Salisbury steak, but it'll be done by Stephanie Eisert or Rick Bayless or someone big, and they'll be like, it's $32. We'll be like, this tastes just like, tastes just like Dinty Moore. It's so good. 773 says, when I go to a fancy restaurant, I think of what I can buy at Jewel with it. $20 to 2-pound sirloin and a bag of potatoes. No brainer. That's a great thought. I've never thought of it like that. Oh, I get 6 of these buns, but they're charging me for one of these buns. Think about this. These French fries came out of a bag. There's probably half a bag left. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're getting into wholesale math. That's what I call wholesale math. I don't know if you want to live your life that way, because that's a surefire way for you to be angry at the world. Oh, man. If I could buy this in bulk. 312-981-7200, the phone number. We're talking about expensive burgers. There's a new piece in the Chicago Tribune in the Daily Meal, which they collaborate with. It's about the most expensive hamburgers, in land, in the U.S. I'm going to read some of these off to you. So the 15th burger is in New York City for $29. I don't even know. The Tavern Burger at Gramercy Tavern in New York is $32. That's, you know what, New York? Knock it off. We get it. Real estate's expensive there. But it's a jack up burgers. I don't buy that one at all. When you start going to the New York, the Gramercy Taverns, like, you know what? Maybe some gold flakes up in that burger for $32. Minetta Tavern, one of my favorites. It's right there in the Village. $33 for a black label burger. Quite possibly New York's most famous burger and one of the most iconic dishes in America. Really? Hadn't heard of it. Sorry. The $33 black label burger sold at Minetta Tavern starts with a custom blend of New York strip, skirt steak, and brisket. The griddled 8-ounce plus patty is topped with sautéed onions before being placed on a custom-made brioche bun. Custom-made. Wonder what 8 of those would go for. It's essentially like eating a dry-aged steak in a burger format. Wow. Minetta Tavern is a great place. If you're ever in New York, in the Village. It's right by the, you know, it's right next to the Cellar, the Comedy Cellar. It's at the beginning of the Louis Show. Things like that. So that's the 13th ranked burger. Then they've got a couple others here. They got the 21 Club Burger. They've got a Delmonico's. These are all New York burgers. Give me a break. The Cheeseburger Grill, they've got a 20-ounce Kobe Burger. That is $43. In Vegas. It's usually shared by Vegas and New York. There's one Chicago one on here. But it's a chain. The Grand Burger at McGuire's Irish Pub in Pensacola, Florida is $100. Let's see what that one is before we go to break here. May seem like an odd place to find a super expensive burger, but here we are in business since 1977. This pub offers a $100 Grand Burger. Custom ground and char-grilled filet mignon served with a side of caviar Merlot sauce and a bottle of champagne. What? You get a bottle of champagne with the burger? I don't know about that. That seems like they're on this list, but how much is that Moet? Is it Moet? Yeah. How much would that bottle of champagne be? $60? Yeah, see? You got to read these things. I have the most expensive burger, but it comes with a Hyundai Sonata. It's an $18,000 burger. The number one is a Fleur Burger, $5,000. Fleur by Hubert Keller in Las Vegas, $5,000 burger. It's served at the Mandalay Bay Casino, and it's truly absurd. That's what the write-up says. Beef patty topped with foie gras and truffle. It doesn't sound like it's worth $5,000. Well, it isn't until you get your bottle of 1995 Chateau Pratroux, one of the world's most prized wines, to wash it down with. What? This is garbage. Is the Tribune vetting any of this stuff? If it's the most expensive burgers, it doesn't come with a bottle of wine. That's weird. 312-981-7200. St. Charles Place in St. Charles has very good expensive burgers. That's great. Hey, tell me where's your favorite expensive burger. That's awesome. Wisconsin cheddar with bacon. And they're half off every Monday. That's good. And that 773 says, I better not be hungry when I come home after that one. You're not going to be hungry and you're not going to be sober because you're drinking a bottle of champagne or a bottle of wine. I don't know that. I love when they call a hamburger chop steak. It's so true. It's ridiculous. All right, we'll take a break here. We'll come back. We'll wrap up. Nick DiGilio coming up next here at 11 o'clock on 720 WGN. What an eclectic, well-rounded program tonight as we're wrapping up here. We talked about in this last hour the Houston Astros cheating scandals got their first lawsuit. a pitcher from the Toronto Blue Jays saying his career was affected by the Astros stealing signs. Will that hold up? It's an interesting lawsuit. We just talked about the most expensive burgers in America, which really is just burgers with bottles of wine. I could do that on my own at home. Go to that bottom shelf. Get a nice bottle of wine from the bottom shelf at the CVS. Make a couple patties at home. We're good to go. We talked about Valentine's Day, a study this year saying that spending will break the record. Millennials poised to spend $200 per person on Valentine's Day. Before that, we talked about the importance of going to wakes and funerals. And many people called up and text. The great segment, sharing their personal experiences with wakes and funerals. Some heart-wrenching stories. But the takeaway was it's important to go. You may not have a lot of time to spend with the person or the family or the grieving, but they'll know you were there. We also talked about what issues are going to bring you out to vote this year. I think we got a good idea of what people care about, especially WGN radio listeners, you. And we started off talking about whether or not you would be in support of Illinois becoming a full-service gas station state. Now, a bill that today was introduced in Springfield wants to bring us back to the days of full-service attendance. That was right at the top of the show. A lot of vitriol, a lot of anger. People mad about that one. It turned quickly into, you got nothing other better to do? And that was pretty much the vibe. But you know, if it comes down to, if you're not relieving us of some of our tax burden, property tax burden, or you're not fixing the pension crisis, what are you doing? Stop goofing around with the things that nobody asked for. I think that's the moral of that story. But a great show tonight. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio coming up next here on 720 WGN. Tomorrow, some programming notes. Tomorrow, we're only on for a half an hour. Blackhawks are... pregame starts at 7:30, so we're Rose over at 7, so we're on from 7 to 7:30. We'll make the most of it. We'll do like 15 topics in 30 minutes. Really get the bell out. Ding! And then on Wednesday, it's truncated as well. I'm not sure what I think we're on till 9, something like that, maybe 8:30 or 9. I think the Hawks are on the West Coast. It's a late game. And then we'll be with you Thursday and Friday with full shows. On Valentine's Day. What should we do for Valentine's Day? Just constant stream of love stories? We can sing love songs? All sorts of stuff. Got plenty to do. Here on 720 WGN. 773 says, I was at Michael Jordan's restaurant in Union Station in New York City back in 2001, prior to 9/11. They had a steak burger that was $28. A lot of money for a hamburger back then. However, it was quite large, so two of us shared it. It was still one of the best burgers I've eaten. $28 would be, yeah, that used to be the highest. Remember that? $28 for a hamburger? That would get you a kicker story on the news. It's $28 at Union Station and, you know, well, a new burger's coming to the train station and you're not going to like it. It's way too expensive. They did that story, right? Now, I think $28, you'd be like, I'll take it. Some of the high-end places in Chicago are trending towards... $28 for a regular burger in the 30s for something special, which is crazy. Can you imagine? I can't even imagine. It's like the one time I was with my dad and he wouldn't go into the sandwich shop that was near my house because the sandwiches were all like $9 and up. And so he's like, he looks like, oh yeah, we'll have some lunch. And I'm like, this is expensive, you know, but I'm like, let's go in. What do you want? He's like, no, I'll stay out here. I was like, you're not even going to go in. He's like, too expensive. I'm not going to. I'm out of, you know, defiance to let them know he's not. I don't even step in your doors with those kind of prices for turkey sandwiches. I'm staying outside. I was like, that's so great. I went in and I ate his too. So both of them. No. All right, Nick D coming up next here on 720 WGN. Stay with us.